Good morning. Morning, everybody. I see the comment section is just alive already. It's all happening. I got Vyasin and Rebellious Ruth and Bitcoin Button, all the people. So I'm delighted. We're not doing this for fuck all this morning. that always makes me feel like it's worthwhile. You know, I see a lot of these podcasters and people who have shows online, YouTubers, whatever you call them. I see these people fighting for, you know, they gotta like hack the algorithm and they've gotta have clicks. And I mean, the longer I've been in this game, the less people I actually want in the audience. I know it sounds ridiculous. And everybody who is marketing us and doing great work in the background is gonna be very pissed off with me, including my producers, James and Flex, because I think if that's the metric, I'm like, I'm not that excited by it anymore. And I listened to the most boring interview this week. Well, 10 minutes of it, where these two guys were talking about the YouTube algorithm and how it works. And I mean, I thought I had to stay in it just so that I, you know, I could be aware of how all of it works. But Jesus, I was falling asleep, Ben. I was falling asleep. It was so dreary. Ben, by the way, is in the mists of the Midlands in KZN. You look like you're in the mists of the Midlands. Are you outside?
God, such a beautiful... No, I'm overlooking the 18th green here at Gowrie Farm Golf Course.
Oh, very good. All right.
It's so idyllic. It is so idyllic. I wish I could take our small audience, cuddle them onto my lap right now, have a cup of tea, and look across here. It is that idyllic.
I mean, we say it's a small audience. I think we're still in the top. We haven't ever dropped out of the top five podcasts in the country at any stage. So maybe that's also why I'm a little bit like about it, just because been there, done that in some way. And it's because of the audience, right? It's not because I think we're great. It's because the people who listen to us have stuck it out with us through all kinds of things. I mean, from radio to like the early days of podcasting. We're talking about this is when Rogan was starting effectively. And it's been amazing. But I feel like the smaller the audience, the more intimate the kind of stuff you can talk about. You know, it's like when you're with your really good friends, you can have conversations about anything. No one gets offended. Nothing's out of bounds. You can take the piss out of each other. It's the kind of conversation that I think everybody wants to have. But you can't have that with millions of people. You just can't. It's not possible. Try as you may, you're going to be pulled into politics and all kinds of other things, and it's ugly. I saw this brilliant thing this week on the internet. It's like a plate with a knife and a fork, and on the plate they've just got a whole lot of pills, and it says, "You've optimized the life out of your life." And I think there are so many of these like pod bros who are doing that, and it's just not interesting to me anymore. I mean, don't get me wrong, I think self-improvement, getting better at things, being more efficient, life hacks, if you want to call it that, are all part of what makes it interesting to grow and to keep developing and getting better. But I think that some people have taken this optimization thing to the ludicrous degree where it's actually removed their personality. They're like an optimization machine.
Gaming the system, but what are you doing to game the system?
Like the estate agents we had on the show last week are all creating content. It's dreary. It's just horrible.
Yeah. You see where it comes from. And just to go back to your whole audience thing as well, I've always thought it's so cringe when you watch a piece of content and the guy stops and goes, "If you like this video, be sure to like and subscribe or click the bell." Yeah. Like, please shut up. Yeah. If your content's good, I will come back to you naturally. Mm-hmm. I'll gravitate back to you. Trust me on this. And, you know, the whole thing about content creation is like we're meant to be creating something new, and it's the new broadcast. Imagine you're watching live TV back in the day, and Derek Watts is on Carte Blanche, and he's like, "If you like this story, be sure to watch us again next week." You know?
But like, they did used to do that.
Really?
Yeah, they used to say... Don't. We'll see you next week. Don't forget that we've got this great breaking story or whatever. Listen, that's marketing, and I get it.
That's how you end a show. That's just a professional throw forward. He wasn't saying, well, if you like me risking my life in front of this gangster, how about you subscribe? Or how about make sure you diarize the show?
I always used to love it when there were like news bloopers where they didn't know that the camera was still going, and then they'd say something terrible, or, you know, they'd be like, ah, fuck you, you... And then someone in the studio gets shat on, or they throw something at somebody. Somebody loses their temper. That was always funny. And that didn't happen enough in TV and radio. So, and at least in podcasting, you get lots of unprofessional behavior. So that I enjoy. Lots of people talking about the petrol price this week. And I know it's probably not an exciting subject for everyone, but this is where the rubber hits the road for most of us, literally and figuratively. Obviously, there are people already, you know, I just have to, we're not going to talk about Iran much this morning because it's really, I don't want to sound blasé or cavalier about it, but it's more of the same. And this week there have been intensified bombings by the US and Israel on Iran, very targeted, as I understand, very targeted attacks on particular individuals. But they've got a new Ayatollah, and We'll show you who he is in just a moment. But before we get to the new Ayatollah, I'm annoyed at how people seem to think, because we live in this consumer culture, conspicuous consumption, instant gratification world, they think everything has to be as long as a TikTok, right? So
yeah,
war must also be as long as a TikTok. And already, I mean, there's 12 days, I think, 13 days that, today's Friday the 13th. Dun, dun, dun. But 13 days, I think they've been at war with Iran, and people are already saying, oh my God, when is the war going to end? You hear grown men.
I'm so over it.
Yeah, grown men and politicians who ought to know better saying, oh, when is the war going to end? And I'm just absolutely astonished at how little backbone and how little meat they have on their bones. These weak, feeble, pathetic, scummy, low-life, average, mediocre, ordinary, dreary, dull, shithead people who think that everything must last as long as their attention span, which has been narrowed to the size of a keyhole, and they're all trying to look down the keyhole with both eyes. It's abominable. Like, guys, seriously, if you know somebody who's already asking, when is the war going to end? You need to give that person a clap. They didn't get enough claps when they were young. They don't know that things, especially meaningful things, take a long time. Not that this war is everybody's cup of tea. It doesn't have to be. You might be completely opposed to it. But if you're one of those people who doesn't have an opinion on it except that you think it should be over already, you must be such an absolute nightmare to live with. Can you imagine what that – are we there yet? Are we there yet? Are we there yet? We take a 5-minute drive to the shops, Charmaine. Calm down in the back seat. The fuck? Really? That's what they're like infants. These are like adult children, toddlers, not even children, who are screaming, are we there yet, from the back of the car. That's what we're dealing with here. These are the level of attentiveness that these people can give to anything in their lives. Can you imagine living with them, working with them, being in a relationship with them, trying to do business dealings with? I mean, that must be impossible, these people. How do you go through life when everything has to be immediate and it has to end as quickly as it began? Blows my mind.
Well, it's just
because it really does.
They've got no experience in how things work or made or how they function. Like, they've got no experience, no understanding of the history of Iran, no understanding of American geopolitics. They've got no understanding about the Middle East. So if you have a brain that is void of those things, this war will feel very trivial. It'll be very much, okay, but now you've done the bombing, now why doesn't it end? If you didn't have any of those knowledge or faculties around that, you'll also say that. Yeah.
Oh, listen, I got to show you the new Ayatollah. And by the way, Morgs from Cape Town, or Morgs of Cape Town, says, take up your IDF uniform then, Gareth, if you're so ready for war. I don't know anything more than the average person about Israel. I don't have a dog in this fight, Morgs. If you think that I'm so ready for war, like anybody who believes that a bunch of mad, lunatic religious extremists shouldn't have a nuclear weapon, if you think those people are like gung-ho for any kind of war, you must be a nightmare to live with too, because you just don't know what danger is. I don't know how you position yourself in the world, Morgs. We're not going to get personal about this, but if you imagine that there's even the faintest possibility, and even people who were opposed to the war in the previous administration, and by that I mean the Biden administration in America, are starting to come out and saying things like, there was enough nuclear material to create, in this guy's words, I wish I knew his name, but I cannot remember what his actual name and title was, but he was involved in the Biden administration and putting together that JOPC deal or whatever it was with Iran. He reckons they had enough nuclear material to build 16 nuclear bombs. Okay, now that's someone on that end of the spectrum. If you believe Pete Hegseth and Marco Rubio and Donald Trump and Benjamin Netanyahu, then they say they were on the verge of making the missiles that could carry this nuclear material. And somewhere in between, there has to be some truth. But there was definitely nuclear activity going on. I mean, that you can monitor, and we were monitoring, and we knew Iran were trying to enrich uranium, which, of course, you need to do in order to make a bomb. Uranium-235 is different to uranium-238. 238 is the stuff we use in power generation all over the world. 235 is the stuff they use in nuclear fission bombs. All right, so that's the stuff you got to worry about. And they were making that stuff. They were enriching uranium into 235 to make bombs. That's absolutely true. Now, if you want mad Ayatollahs who believe in a kid who fell down a well 1,200 odd years ago called the Mahdi, five-year-old kid who fell down the well, he was the last caliph or imam. They're waiting for the 12th imam to come back. He was the 12th imam. To bring him back, this is like an article of faith for these people. This brand of Shia Islam that we're talking about. They want to bring him back, and to bring him back, they have to hasten the end of the world. Morgs, what do you think that means? Do you think that means they want to live in peace and harmony and dance around the fire singing Kumbaya with us? I'll tell you how crazy these people are. I'll show you how they introduced the new Ayatollah to the people of Iran on national television, because they've shut down the internet. They still have control of national television in Iran. This is how they introduced the new Ayatollah Asahollah to the people of Iran. Okay, but this guy is the son of Ayatollah Khamenei, who's been killed. So his whole family's been wiped out, but somehow, supposedly, he could be in a coma. Some people are reporting that he's lost his legs. Some people are saying he's dead. Some people are saying he's fine. But here is how they introduced him to the crowd. And I wish I could tell you this is from a South Park episode, because when you see it, you have to tell me how you can possibly believe that people who are this insane should have been allowed to continue to have power in a place where they've already massacred in just the last 3 or 4 weeks some 30, some people are even saying 40,000 of their own people. Tell me that that doesn't deserve a response. Tell me we should just let people like that carry on, Morgs. Here's the Ayatollah, the new one. Take a look. Now, it's a cardboard fucking cutout. It looks like it's from South Park. Like Terrence and Philip. Hey, Terrence, what are you doing today? I don't know, Philip. That's what it looks like. That is ludicrous. These are not serious people. You cannot tell me that I am all pro-war and gung-ho and that I'm on Israel or America's side, which I am on this particular subject. I'm unashamedly on their side, because the other side has got a cardboard cutout for a leader. Okay, we have pretty stupid and useless leaders in South Africa, but at least they're not cardboard cutouts. A new low. I mean, it would be great if that was just a funny TV show. It's too on the nose. It's unbelievable. Israel would have been no more, says Bitcoin Butch, if they had a nuclear weapon. Not just Israel, but they want to hasten the end of the world. And remember, there's a chain reaction, if you'll, again, pardon that very obvious pun. Once you release the whole point of nuclear weapons is it's a deterrent. But if you decide to use it like the Americans did in 1945, there's a chain reaction of stuff that happens after that. If Iran did have a nuclear weapon, even if they just tested a nuclear weapon, that means they probably have more. That changes the whole landscape, right? And I don't mean the actual landscape. I mean the political landscape. Then you have retaliation, and it escalates and escalates, and eventually we end up with all of us in a nuclear winter. Not good. Not good. I would rather have this. Yes, it is worth anything that America is prepared to go through for this, and I don't know how much they're prepared to go through either, because the American population is, as I said, attention span of a fruit fly and not necessarily in the mood for another war, thanks to the last two being two, 3 decades long and having disastrous results. I don't blame them. But I think it's a pretty good thing for the world if a mad regime like the Ayatollahs in Iran are stopped from having a nuclear weapon. And I don't know that that's so controversial. I know that Fikile Mbalula and a bunch of ANC people went to the Iranian embassy in Pretoria to like put flowers down for the dead Ayatollah. Please, someone, like, pinch me. I must be in a very bad dream. But no, it's true. This is what they did.
These guys, the ultimate artists of irony here. They were so, I mean, it's a legit regime. You know, people don't do nice things when they get called regimes. And it's so oppressive and terrible to people. And their whole thing is like, oh, we're so against oppression. Yeah, okay. Unless it gives you money.
You know, we had, I think South Africa, I think it was 7 nuclear warheads. And we're one of the only countries, the only other ones being Libya? I don't want to say Libya because I'm not entirely sure, but definitely the Ukraine and us that abandoned our nuclear program voluntarily. And that happened before 1994, the old regime in South Africa, which was wicked in every way, right? Except that they said, you know what? This nuclear thing's not a good idea. Now, whatever their motivations might have been, they might have looked at the ANC and gone, for fuck's sake, can't give those guys nuclear power, nuclear weapon power. But even if that was their motivation, a good thing. So we are, again, one of the few places South Africa can actually claim moral authority is there. These guys were never going to do that. They were never going to do that. They kept on lying to the weapons inspectors. They were lying to Obama. They were lying to Biden. So this is how we end up in this place. And wherever it goes from here, we have to ride this horse now. The whole world has to, and that includes you at the petrol pump, I'm afraid. Because, yes, oil prices are going to go up. The Straits of Hormuz, which is where all the oil is ferried around, happen to be controlled, or up to very recently were controlled by Iran. Whether they're still controlled by Iran and not a cardboard cutout of an Iranian Navy ship is up for grabs. Who knows? Anyway, that's all I wanted to say about that. Koketsu says I sound like Andrew Tate. Do I? What did I? Did I say something about women? Bitches. Did I say something about bitches? I haven't watched enough Andrew Tate to know if I've said anything like him, but I certainly hope that's not true. I hope you're taking the piss out of me, which is fine. Then we got a couple of other comments here that are worth referring to, and I do want to move on after this. Rebellious Ruth says you got to watch out for that. Oh, no, sorry. Rebellious Ruth is talking to someone there. People are talking to each other in here, so I don't know. You guys, why don't you just start a WhatsApp group? The whole point of the comments section is so that we can take your comments and interact with them here on the show, which is the reason I think that we're all gathered here, right? Sorry, I just occasionally have to remind people of the purpose of this mission. The problem is that most of the people are receiving their education from TikTok regarding the matter, says Nevin Pele. That is correct, sir. That is exactly right. And TikTok, listen, I'm not one to tell anybody what to do with their internet or their time, but if you have kids and they're under the age of, I would say, 16 even, you got to get them off that TikTok, man. It is brain rot. It is not useful information. You know, everybody knows this now. It's not a hidden secret or a conspiracy theory that China does not allow its own children to access the kind of slop that children all over the rest of the world are accessing. They want their kids to learn. So TikTok in China is educational. It's like they teach you how to fix a plug or how to build a little robot, or how to do maths calculations faster, or what the history of X and Y war country.
Should I come back in like 10 minutes?
Sorry, am I on a rant?
Fuck. Yes, we know TikTok does that. Shit, Friday.
Okay, sorry. Doing? All right, let's move on. Oh, yeah, thank you for correcting my misjudgment of the situation there, Ben. All right, so we're going to Live Golf next week, huh? This is going to be exciting. I've never been to a golf event with you, and I've never been to I haven't been to any golf events full stop.
I know. Look how excited you are. That's so cool. Yeah, it's a thing here. So, Gareth, I can tell you that around 90,000 to 95,000 people are probably going to go watch this event next weekend. It is going to be huge. Yeah, and it's just so cool what they've done. I listened to a podcast this week where they're breaking down all the things that they've built. It's going to be something so new for all of us. And I think the non-golfers will probably actually end up having a better time because it will be so completely new. Golfers have certain expectations, but mm-hmm. where this event's going, what else has got? And there's a party hall where there's going to be dress up. It's just
Black Coffee's going to be there. It seems like it's going to be amazing.
Yeah, so Black Coffee will be on the Friday, Calvin Harris on the Saturday, and then Goldfish suitably on a Sunday.
Fantastic. All right, well, I am looking forward to that. We will get to some sport a little bit later on. We also got Dr. Hanan on this morning. Mash is popping by. We'll be talking to Waris's mum, who has agreed to come in and chat to us, and I think she's been through a very, very rough time, understandably. I mean, what parent ever wants to go through what she's just gone through? But I thought it would be a good idea for us to, pay tribute to our friend and her son and talk a little bit about what, his family background, his mom, his life as a kid, what she remembers, and really just kind of celebrate the guy, which I think would be amazing. Yes. All right. I want to talk to you about something very important. There's actual news, and this is my favorite story of the day. Someone actually tipped me off on Instagram, and she said, oh, you have to talk about the Real Housewives and this chick called Mel Viljoen. No, South African, Real Housewives of Pretoria is the one.
Right.
And there's this chick called Mel Viljoen. She used to run like a nail salon or something. Is that what? Tammy Taylor Nails. But then they got into shit because her husband was a lawyer and they apparently used the Tammy Taylor brand or something when they hadn't paid for it. And they basically just – I mean, these two are – the word is skellums. They are – they're skellums. They're crooks. They are skabengas. They're just – they're bad people. And I'll tell you why they're bad people, not just because of that, because maybe you thought that was made up and they were being victimized. So Mel Viljoen and her husband Piet were arrested in Florida, that's in the USA, on the 10th of March for shoplifting. Look at that. That's a proper American mugshot. You don't get those anywhere else. That is so embarrassing. Anyway, they were arrested for shoplifting. More than $5,300, which is about 88,000 rand, in groceries from a public supermarket. Yeah, there's a place called Publix with an X. And groceries. Authorities claim the couple ran a 6-month ticket switching scheme involving 52 transactions, with Piet allegedly distracting the staff. I wish I was making this up. This is better than the cardboard Ayatollah. Piet would distract the staff. Hello, can you help me to try and find the dishwashing liquid? And then Mel would scan items at the checkout, but she'd only scan half the items. And then they were arrested during a traffic stop in Boca Raton, and each faced an aggravated grand theft charge and $10,000 in bail. What a shit show. Isn't that funny?
That is so good. I'd love to, but I'm sure there'll be like CCTV footage of something of them doing. I'd love to, because you know that it's not exactly sophisticated what they would do.
Well, don't worry. America's really good at turning like average criminals into like a mini series. So that, who knows that they won't make a story of, you know, the South African shifty, dodgy people who came here. What were some of the items that they stole? Or that they San Pellegrino water.
Oh, you got the best.
You know, when you steal water, that is just it's a new low. And well, maybe San she Pellegrino washes her, water. I mean, what the hell?
Maybe she washes her harder in it.
Yeah, because she's got such great harder. I'm just amazed. I'm really amazed. This is a great story. I never paid much attention to Real Housewives of Pretoria, but I kind of wish I'd been part of that story so I could enjoy this even more. It's just terrible. Really shitty. They stole Prosecco as well. So they were basically boozing and stealing water. It's just, I mean, how do you rack up like 80? If you spent 88,000 Rand over how many months did they say it was? Over 6 months. Okay, no, that's, yeah. I mean, that's a lot of groceries. You know, it's substantial. But wow, they decided to defraud the system from the moment they got there. You know, you think about it. If you end up in a new country, the first thing you do is you try not to upset the people who already live in that country. Like going into someone's house and you decide to just ruin their place. You turn it upside down. You leave a mess everywhere you go. You fuck up the plumbing. You break the light bulbs. You leave the bed in a mess. It's so rude that you do this. You go into someone else's country and you behave like this. It's not good. And I don't think this is a reflection on all South Africans, so I'm not saying it on that part. I just think these are just common vulgar people, right?
Again, I want to see CCTV footage. How can you get this? How can you steal this much from such a basic scheme? I'm trying to put the visuals together in my head. I mean, how was he distracted? Was he shirtless? Does he speak bad French? Like, how can a man be?
Apparently, this Mel Fulyun was also on the roast of Helen Ziller, which I didn't watch. Okay, and then Viasen says hilariously, "The Sun and The Voice," which are newspapers that are still in existence, have their weekend headlines now, thanks to Mel Fulyun. Very nice. We haven't talked about Taylor Swift in a while, Gareth. Would you date her if she was the last chick on the planet? Why do you hate Taylor so much, and what did she ever do to you? I don't hate Taylor. Where did you get that from, limited edition?
What a loaded question out of nowhere.
I don't think I've – I think that the people who are slavishly – adoring, obsessed fans of hers. I think they have mental health problems. But I don't think Taylor's a horrible person. I don't think she's in any way like off-putting or unattractive. I mean, compared to the world's biggest failure, you know who that is, Ben?
Cyril Ramaphosa.
No, that's where you're wrong. Even Cyril has not failed as much as the world's greatest failure. The person I'm talking about is Meghan Markle, because all of her Netflix projects were cancelled this week. So she's failed in television. She's failed in movies. She's failed in Royalty. She's failed in cooking shows. She's failed in her whole product line, whatever it's called, Ever Always or Always Ever or Yours Ever or whatever the fuck it's called. It's just fallen flat completely. And now Netflix has said, we're not doing anything with this chick. She is poison. Everyone hates her. She's so cuck at this that she is now probably, if you calculate all of these failures, she's the biggest failure in entertainment. And she could have had it all. So compared to her, Taylor is an absolute colossus. She's the antithesis of Meghan Markle. I also think Taylor Swift's probably on the attractiveness scale, maybe a little less hot than Meghan Markle. Maybe. Just because she's got a little bit of that. Yeah, she's not that hot. But I think that this boyfriend of hers, this Travis Kelce guy, and the fact that she's not whining about ex-boyfriends anymore, I feel she's become better in some way. So I don't have a problem with her. But clearly you're thinking about her a lot, limited edition. So maybe you're one of those obsessed fans.
I would say in the years gone by, we've said some unsavory things about her, but I think it's been based in behavioral stuff and what a terrible role model she is to young women. Always bitching about guys, different guys, high body counts. You know, it's like women are the best and guys are like icky, and it's just so juvenile. But that's been her brand. That's been her product.
Sure.
You know, so everyone's got preferences, and on this show, obviously, we completely throw it out of proportion with hot takes and scandal. But yeah, I think she's very average. But yeah, there's lots of average people in this world. It's a lot of people. I'm an average person.
I'm sure even the people who do hate Taylor Swift know one or two of her songs. So she's one.
I don't.
You know that. You know that one.
Take it off.
James, give me a song. They're like ages ago. Ben, she's been around long enough. You'll know her songs. Trust me.
No, I'm trying to jog my memory. I'm sure I know the songs, but at 6:34 this morning, one doesn't come to my head. I'm just Shake It Off. That's one of her songs, right?
There was a question for you about whether or not you were hanging. You were hungover this morning from somebody. And someone else asked. Someone said they want to know more about, what did you shoot at Gowrie? Heard it's a hell of a course.
Guys, this course is so great. I was filming a lot of things yesterday, so I think I ended up shooting 83 with a birdie on the last. As you know, golf and travel are my two greatest passions, and being able to film this place makes me the happiest guy in the whole world, because it's a big story of what's being created here. And there's a lot of detractors around if it's that good or not. It's a bit like Taylor Swift, really. But on the opposite spectrum, it's not a mainstream hit. The guy who owned this, also who built it along and is business partners with the great Dale Hayes, Guy Smith, he's obsessed with Lynx golf courses, and he wants to create something special. And I don't think he actually cares if the general golfing public like it or not. He's like, well, cool. There's lots of golf courses in this country. This one's going to be like this. And just on that, I admire the guy. And just on that, he's my golfing designer spirit animal, because he has created something very cool here. It's a great place to hit driver as well. You can just hit bombs around here all day. And the wind was pumping yesterday. And then afterwards, you split a couple of G's with your mates, and life's good.
That sounds amazing. Slippery Pickle says, it's a very smart move not to criticize and be negative about Taylor Swift, because she is an up-and-coming sorceress, which is a good point. and then Sade is just reminding us from the last show we did that any woman can be a lesbian. Yes, indeed. That is true. That is absolutely right. And then Carl says, Carl Frumpy, this is a new Carl. We have many Carls in the comment section, but this is a new one. Says, you know what, Ben? Haters gonna hate. That's her.
That's the song.
So you know that song.
It's called Shake. Yeah, but that's what I was trying to get to.
That's the one. See? Well done, Carl. Hey. Thanks for getting us there. And Congo Chris live in the comments with Guten Morgen, mein Morgenmuffels. Sure. I wonder what he calls his wife. Morgenmuffels. We've got a German guy here in the office called Olaf, and he's going to be supplying us with long German words from next show on, and we're going to have to try and say them, but do it in broken telephone. So I'll say it to like Leanne, and then she'll say it to you, and then we see how badly we fuck it up before it gets to the end of the line.
Wow, that's going to be a drop pizza at the end of it.
I want to talk about this before we leave celebrities in South Africa alone, people like Mel and Piet. So here's another embarrassing South African. Here's Julius Malema. This is an actual picture. And I do want you to, when you look at this picture, just remember that this guy is a socialist who keeps talking about nationalizing the mines. People shouldn't have private property. The banks should be nationalized. No one should. Everyone should be equally poor. He's a self-confessed socialist communist. But I want you to look at this picture. Iyo bangani iyo. All right, so that's Julius. He's in a luxury car. It looks like it's only a two-seater car, so I can't imagine what it is. Probably some kind of Maserati.
McLaren.
Is it a McLaren? Holy fuck.
I'm pretty sure.
What do those cost, Ben? What do those cost?
I put a 5 million, I think.
All right. Then he's obviously got a pair of – what are those pants? What's that brand?
Louis Vuitton.
Like Louis Vuitton, okay, and then the shirt with Burberry all over it. His wife's got a Louis Vuitton bag. There's an Ace of Spades bottle of champagne, which is one of the most expensive bottles of champagne you can have. There's a shopping bag. I mean, this is capitalism working its magic. And even an ardent socialist is either a self-conscious fraud. In other words, he knows every morning when he wakes up, he's going to lie through his teeth and tell people he's a communist, even though he doesn't believe that. And he's just deceiving people. Or he's too stupid to know that communism has made him its bitch. I mean, those are the only two explanations, because that picture is everything you need to know about champagne socialism. I mean, just go back to it, because everybody who's ever voted for the EFF or thinks Julius is some kind of hero who's going to save anyone but Julius, I after seeing this picture, I defy you to tell me how. How? This is an expression of someone who is a materialist and a capitalist and a big spender and who feels absolutely nothing for doing all of that. He doesn't look well, by the way. He does not look well. I've just got to say that, too. I don't know what's going on there with his health. Speculation isn't just coming from me, but doesn't look well. So there, I needed to put that out there for you to think about this morning, too. As you drive to work in your much less expensive car without a bottle of champagne on the passenger seat, and, of course, he obviously had his girlfriend or his wife or somebody taking the picture, or maybe a side chick, who knows, with Julius. You never know. He's really living the life of a Temu billionaire. That's what he's doing.
That's all that counts. It's all anybody who's ever got into this whole "we're for the people" game has always wanted. You can go through anywhere in history, it's always been the same thing. You're a socialist for the vote, you're a capitalist for the life.
Yeah, and it's amazing how you can live with that hypocrisy, those two stories that cannot possibly coexist in a logical brain. They can't. They'll annihilate each other like matter and antimatter, but he seems to be able to live with the duality perfectly well. Christian says it's a Lamborghini. And we didn't even mention the watch, which I can't identify, but we know he has a Breitling watch, which is also just fuck-off expensive, right? Calotti says that is a McLaren, because there's a McLaren logo on the headrest. Guys, we need some internet sleuths here to clear this up for us. We need to understand what this is. I can't see.
Yeah, it's McLaren.
Is it? Okay. All right. Thanks, Ben. Congratulations to Ben and Calotti for getting that right. Everybody else, you keep your opinions to yourself.
I mean, I'm not even a fancy car guy anymore. That's all above my head. I like the simple things.
Oh, man. Just because this is the only show that we consistently do this, we are very consistent about it. We haven't ripped into fat people, though, as regularly as we might have before. And I did find this video last night, and I thought, since we're going to keep Friday happy, and I didn't in the first half an hour of this morning because I was unloading all my thoughts about the news of the week, but since we got on to Mel and Piet, it's been all fun and games. And here is a fat girl on a trampoline just to make your Friday, Ben. I know how much you love seeing fat people on Fridays.
Yeah, always. I can't believe
obviously AI, but that's what AI is for. People think AI is going to be like the Terminator. We're all going to be killed by these robots. It's going to take all the jobs. It's going to upend all of humanity. And then you see that and you're like, nah, people will just make stupid videos with AI. And that's great enough for me. If you ask me, that's exactly what it should be doing.
I saw something the other day, again, these things get thrust in front of you. Somewhere in South America, there is like this detective show where cats are actually like the police people. And then, but they talk like old men with mustaches and they're having gunfights. And it was incredible. But it was made to look like a 70s detective show.
Speaking about Temu's rebellious Ruth, can we sue them for harassment with their ads? Never bought from them and never will. Are their ads coming up a lot? I haven't noticed.
Always.
And apparently that McLaren is worth 5.1 million rand. Now look, the reality is he probably doesn't own it, but that he wants to be seen in it and that he will allow himself to be photographed in it is just the stupidest thing. You can't have someone who's that dumb leading a country. He's too dumb to be allowed to lead anything. Not even a rats and mice party like he has. It's just embarrassing. Human wrecking ball for that big girl, says Melissa. Yes, that's absolutely right. And getting them every fucking third email, Temu. That's according to Patrick. So maybe they are the number one advertiser in social media at the moment. I don't know. I'm not sure. But it's between them, the betting companies, and the insurance companies. One of those three, right? Got to be. I mean, I got ad blockers on, and I still see all of those. All right, Ben, we have to get to Dr. Hanan in a second, and we also want to get to the sport, which we'll do straight after that. We've also, as I said, got MASH coming in and plenty more after that too, so stick around for all of this. Is he not on yet? All right, okay, well, I mean, then we can maybe Ben can start us off on some sport. We've already talked about LIV Golf next week. Who's coming? Who's on the roster?
Well, obviously not Patrick Reed or Brooks Koepka. Those are only two names that haven't fallen out of LIV. But otherwise, yeah, Bryson DeChambeau, Joaquin Neiman. Obviously, those are your two like big guys, along with John Rahm. Those are your guys you want to see. Cam Smith, the Aussie with the mullet. There's a lot of like really big stars that people haven't seen in this country before, or someone like Sergio Garcia, obviously they have seen before. And then the Southern Guard team, which is the South African guys, Dean Burmester, Charles Swartzel, Brandon Grace, Louis Oosthuizen. And these guys, like, what's really cool about these Oaks is that they've really embraced the whole thing that they're an SA team. And everywhere they travel in the world, so currently LIV's getting played in Singapore. You know, the expats and people, they always come out and you get these proudly SA Oaks in the Bok jerseys or the Southern Guard kit. And it's a dynamic that golf's never seen. And I got to say that in the beginning, people thought it was a bit gimmicky, but team aspect within golf, people thought it could only happen in the Ryder Cup. And that's obviously where it's at its pinnacle and you can't compete with that. But the sort of lesser version of how they've made teams more ubiquitous with the format, I think it's really something that LIV has done bloody well. And it's going to come out next week. You're going to see people normally go to golf to support their favorites here and there, but they're behind these guys as a unit, and it's going to create such a vibe. But Gareth, another big thing tomorrow, the Stormers are going to be at Loftus to take on the Bulls. 2:30.
Oh,
what a game.
I remember you mentioning last week that I should go to Loftus on Saturday, but no, I won't.
Well, tens of thousands of South Africans are, and it's going to be a thing, huh? So the Bulls are actually in a reversal of fortune, currently like SA's best team in the URC. The Stormers were doing great, and now they've just fallen to shit, though. They're currently fifth in the log. Oh, it's a bit of a drain, really. They were doing so incredibly well. But yeah, that game's going to be, so get there early if you are going, because there's going to be tunnies ramming the entrance. There's going to be brier smoke everywhere. It's going to be a proper SA day out in Pretoria tomorrow. It's just one of those beautiful things. I know the weather's been a bit dodgy.
Flex has already got his Flex has got his tickets. He's ready to go. He's got a bucket hat to wear. It's going.
Yeah, and if you live in Joburg, like, use the car train, make it a full day where you can just get all the touch points. It's just so cool. But it's quite a big weekend of rugby because the Six Nations comes to an end. So right. It looks like none of these teams have wanted to win it, right? France were the best in the world. England were the best in the world, all coming into the tournament. But they've been average. England have been absolutely more than average. They've been absolutely shit. They've lost. I mean, they lost to Italy last time around, which was very embarrassing. So there's three teams that can essentially win the Six Nations tomorrow. It kicks off with Ireland. It kicks off with Ireland versus Scotland tomorrow at 4:00. So France currently are top of the log. So they actually are on 16 points with a fantastic points difference. Okay. So all they need to do is beat basically England with a bonus point and they can't lose. That's the final game of the weekend. But the interesting one is Scotland versus Ireland. So Scotland are doing really well. They're also on 16 points. So that's 2 points ahead of Ireland. But in the last 12 encounters, they have not beaten Ireland. It's just their bogey team. It's their nemesis team. But if they can do the unthinkable away, which makes it even more difficult, then they can suddenly put lots of pressure on France in that final game against England. And just how luck has it in sports, you know, maybe England will finally do something. So those are two massive games for you to watch tomorrow. Ireland versus Scotland, 4:10. France versus England, 10:10. And in the middle, Wales and Italy will be doing their usual fighting over the wooden spoon. Well, actually not, because Italy have done so much better than England. They're on 9 points. England are on 6, and Wales are on 1 point. So credit to Italy. Italy have had 2 wins this campaign, but that is traditionally it's the game who doesn't finish 6th. England are kind of in that mix as well. Yeah, it's kind of weird. If Wales actually wins and they win, no, their points difference is so shot because they got hammered by France. So yeah, Wales are probably going to finish last no matter what. And that's just where they are right now. It was a huge week of football. So Champions League obviously came out and it was the round of 16. So, you know, the great thing about the Champions League is that it brings new life into teams that have done really badly so far this season, like Liverpool, like Chelsea, and they've got something to play for. Spurs.
Dr. Hanan, do you have a favorite football team?
Officially Manchester United, but I just watch the big games.
Oh, okay. Then he's not a big fan then. I mean, that even James is laughing at you now, Dr. Hanan. We'll just pretend we didn't bring that up, all right?
James, on what grounds can you play? Let's actually put a pin in it right there. Well, James can just think of his actions right now. How is he laughing?
Yeah, exactly. What a cheek. All right, so listen, Ben, I'm going to ask you to just hold on Champions League and all the rest of it for just a second here, because we've got some amazing mail here from somebody, and Dr. Hanan is right on time to help sort out this person's problem. Now, you know, we take our audience's psychological issues very seriously, and this time we have a question from Anonymous. Anonymous says, "Dear Dr. Hanan, what are the do's and don'ts of confronting a family member about their abusive behavior? We as a family are planning to hold an intervention to hold our violent and physically, emotionally, and verbally abusive sibling accountable." It's not Flex. "We have involved the police and child services since this pertains to a minor child. The abuser does not yet know about the police." Okay, this is a very serious thing. So it isn't Flex, just so that everybody's clear. But clearly this is a big problem. Every family has their dark horse or their black sheep or whatever, but this sounds like a serious abuser. And it's physical, emotional, and verbal abuse. And this person's asking, what are the do's and don'ts that they should think about while actually trying to hold this person accountable? What do you say?
Well, the moment it spills over, the physical and emotional abuse, we take the negotiation out of the picture and we deal with this as a safety and a legal thing. So yes, they've reached out to the police and social services and let them lead the process to make sure the person is contained. beyond that, once that has run its course, now we can deal with negotiating the person by making sure that they never cross that line of physical, emotional abuse. And physical and emotional abuse can be put in the same category. So people think that you only reach out for safety and the legal processes once that crosses over the physical, but you should do the same when it crosses over the emotional abuse. So we deal with the safety first, the legal first, and then we deal with the negotiation, the psychological second.
Sure. I mean, it's obviously there are certain rules which you just said apply once the person crosses that mark. But leading up to that, are there any, I hate to use the term, but red flags that people should be aware of that they can identify early on? And remember, this is a sibling, so this is probably someone that has grown up around the rest of them. They've probably seen telltale signs in that person's childhood. Are there ways of helping to shape a personality out of that kind of abusive behavior?
So the reality, nobody is abusive on day one. It's a progressive thing. So you give people a finger and then they take the second one. Before you know it, they've taken the whole hand. So when you watch somebody that's abusive in a romantic relationship or abusive as a child or as a sibling, it doesn't start off with physical or emotional, let's call it level 10. It always starts off at level 1. And your job in that tribe, in that community, is to pick up on the level 1 and be able to call it out when it happens. But what a lot of parents, a lot of siblings, and I understand, because they don't want to aggravate the situation. They're afraid of conflict. They don't want to make the person mad. Maybe the person is super and ultra manipulative, and most of them are. So they don't want to confront it. So they act like an ostrich with its head in the sand and pretend that the warning signs are not there. It's like driving your car, hearing a funny noise in the engine and praying to God that it's nothing and just keeping on driving, hoping that the sound goes away. But what ends up happening, it progressively gets worse. And once the car stops, once the abusive person becomes abusive, crosses that line, it's no surprise, but you've seen the signs early on. But to answer your question, Gareth, you should address these red flags or these orange flags early on in the relationship. The moment the person acts inappropriately, even in minor ways, the moment the person crosses boundaries, even in minor ways, the moment the person becomes abusive, oversteps the appropriate boundaries, speaks to you in ways, engages you in ways that don't feel comfortable to you, engage in conversation. One or two things will happen once you engage in conversation. One, you'll realize that the person, they're self-reflected, they've regulated, they've gone back to being within appropriate boundaries, or they won't. But what you will always get is appropriate data, accurate data, to be able to take it to the next step, either return back to the relationship, which is not appropriate, or call it off, or address the situation when it does come up.
What do you do at the next level, though? Let's say you just gave the example of you have a conversation and you can tell that this person is self-reflective, but in the alternative, they don't. They get even more aggro. They're explosive. They double down on their abuse, effectively. What do you do then?
So it's very difficult later on in the relationship, once you're married or you have kids, and it's really consequential leaving the relationship. So I see this a lot. Married couple, the woman is reliant on her husband, let's just say, for financial stability. And now calling it off is really consequential. So it's a lot more difficult to address these situations later on. That's where you should address it at the moment that it appeared, the moment it rears its head. Once you address it and the person behaves, well, then you win. And if the person doesn't behave, and I want to just highlight, people don't behave or change their ways because they want to. People change their ways because they have to. You got to create enough consequences, enough of a cost to get somebody to behave. But to your question, if they don't, well, you have two choices. Either continue in an abusive relationship that you can pretty much predict is going to get progressively worse, because these things do not get better by themselves, or you choose to realize that there's no deal. A relationship is an agreement of fulfillment of needs between two people or more. And the moment the other person cannot fulfill your need, they can't respect your boundaries, then perhaps it's worth your while, certainly early on, when you don't have much invested in the relationship and leaving the relationship is not consequential, perhaps it's worth your while to understand that this is a bad deal going down the line, and therefore you should call it off as you see the person betraying the boundaries.
Well, Vyasin says in the comments, I don't know if you'd consider this abuse of Dr. Hanan, but I'm not a fan of Dr. Hanan anymore. United supporter, very sad.
Well, it shows he can deal with abuse, though.
Yeah, I suppose that's true. It shows that you have a lot of, in Afrikaans, they call it deursettingsvermoë. You have a lot of staying power. Limited says, if I were anonymous, I would first focus on getting and gathering as much evidence as possible before I take the matter to the courts of law. It's pointless to take a person to court without proof nowadays. I think that's a practical bit of advice, not bad advice at all. Congo Chris says, joke for Hanan. How many psychologists does it take to change a light bulb? Just one, but the light bulb really wants to have to change. All right, very good. Dr. Hanana, you've got patients up the yin-yang all day today, so enjoy your Friday sorting out all those nutcases.
Thank you.
We'll see you we'll see you next Friday.
See you then. Bye, guys.
Okay, ciao. So, Ben, some questions for you. First, Melissa says, to go back to the sport, useful segue from Melissa. Yesterday was 20 years since South Africa and Australia played arguably the best ODI in cricket history at the Wanderers. You agree?
Yeah, 4-3-8 game. No one's ever done it, and no one's really cared about ODI cricket since then, really. So there's been games with more runs, but that was the most iconic. And because it decided an actual series, you know, those two teams were 2-2 going into the fifth game. It was the greatest game. It really was.
And one other thing that someone asked here, this is Bitcoin Butt says, what are your thoughts on the Sean Strickland versus Khamzat matchup?
Is that going to happen? Really?
Don't ask me.
Khamzat will destroy him. Khamzat will destroy most people unless, like, they've got maybe Craig Jones's acumen towards BJJ or takedown defense or whatever. No, I mean, that guy's just got – he's got a skill set that is significantly more difficult to deal with than anything else. But also he's a weirdo, hey, like, why doesn't he fight? He's injured or he's got some sort of story or yes, he's just a very odd guy. But I think that's what it's what MMA is about. I don't, after what he did to Dricus, and again, I think people mustn't forget that Dricus is a force of nature. There's a lot of good about Dricus. He's an incredible fighter. He's got a lot of things. If a guy's able to do that to him, he will do that to pretty much anybody unless they are Dougie Steiny's finest. It's as simple as that. Yeah. People can criticize Dricus all they want, but the leg didn't come to that fight to lay down, and he was just humbled that day.
All right, let's get back to where we were in Champions League. So
what I was saying with Champions League is that teams like Liverpool and Chelsea and Spurs, who have just been so embarrassing for what their expectations were in the league this year, they get that last little shot at glory and redemption in the Champions League, but shit, did this week tumble down for them as well. Hey, Spurs lost 5-2 to PSG. 5-2. You know, because these Champions League things are two legs, so you play home and away. So if you do bad in the first leg, you can redeem yourself in the second leg. But how are Chelsea coming back from 5-2? Man City, they lost 3-0 to Real Madrid. That's a massive thing to come back from. Atletico beat Spurs 5-2. Spurs was so shit. After 16 minutes, I think they conceded three goals. The interim manager substituted the goalkeeper. Like, the most embarrassing thing for a goalkeeper is, like, they never get substituted. Goalkeepers go off with, like, their head. They never get substituted. It's not like he's not playing so well. After 16 minutes, the guy has to do the walk of shame back to the halfway line. And then afterwards, the coach is seen telling his players not to panic. Bro, you just did the biggest panic move possible. You subbed your keeper. So that they're pretty shite. Newcastle were very unlucky to draw with Barcelona 1-1. Barcelona got a penalty right at the end of the game. And Liverpool, they lost to Galatasaray 1-0.
Okay.
So, yep. Tough, another tough week, huh? Obviously, Arsenal didn't have their greatest game. They've been on the road a hell of a lot in the last 2 months. And I think it started to show when they were away to Leverkusen. But they managed to get a draw and 1-1. So they go back to the Emirates for the second leg next week, obviously with a much stronger constitution of where they're going to go. But look, the Premier League is back. And on the Bounce show this week, we did a full run-in about what the last 9-8 games look for the two top teams, Man City and Arsenal. And it's Arsenal, of course, are 7 points clear. Man City do have one game in hand. And it's not a foregone conclusion because sport at this level is just so incredibly competitive. And some of the teams like Arsenal and Man City, they're in all the cup competitions right now. So their squad is very strained. They're playing a lot of games. Someone like Man United, who basically have nothing going for themselves other than being in the Premier League and finishing top four, they can focus on these games. Fresh squad, guys are well rested, all that kind of stuff. So this weekend, we'll see Chelsea versus Newcastle, 7:30. Both teams are going to have a lot to play for there. Arsenal will take on Everton at home, so they're going to be back home feeling much better at 7:30. And then West Ham versus Man City. So you think the top teams should get 3 points there. And then Sunday, Man United will take on Aston Villa. So Man United are trying to get in the top four. Aston Villa are trying to stay in the top four. They've hit the skids a bit recently. And then James's team, Liverpool, will take on Spurs, who are trying to not get relegated. Wow, what a game that's going to be. Liverpool should win that. They're a much better team. But if Liverpool lose to Spurs this weekend, it will go down as the worst title defense in the history of the football. Not the sport.
James is shaking. He's shaking his head and pretending he doesn't care and everything's going to be fine. I suppose it's delusion. It's like Julius sitting in the expensive car with the Louis Vuitton shorts and the Burberry shirt, thinking he can still pretend to be a communist. It's crazy.
That's true. Delusion. James had a tough time, and what really gets him is that not only am I right, but Arsenal are going to clean it up. They're going to pick up trophies. And James, spoiler alert, I will not gloat about this. I'm a bigger person than that. I've seen your antics over the years, and I realize that I want to be the same as you. So I'll be gracious in victory, and I'll enjoy it for what it is.
All right, speaking of enjoying things, what does your day consist of today? Some golf and some filming of golf?
That was all yesterday. So it's a wonderful misty morning. I'm going to go to the clubhouse and have some breakfast. I think I'll have the full Dale Hayes.
And, Jesus, you're never going to get up after that.
I'm going to get a couple more shots because when I arrived here, it was a perfect sunshine. Yesterday it was cloudy and windy, and this morning it is misty. And, I've always said, I want to share my experiences I have in this weird life of mine. And I think if you are a golfer or just a Joburger, you should come to this place. It is so great. And that Notties pub in Nottingham Road there, what a cool spot, eh? It's like an old hotel. Yep. You can also stay at. There's a really cool bar and restaurant. Osterrant was there last night. So
Already?
That's a massive celebrity part, sir. Like I just every time I go to small towns in this country, I have the most fun, and every trip just feels like it's so new for me. Even though I've been to all these places so many times, it never gets old. And then later this morning on the drive, Osterland walks into a bar. You know, I used to go, yeah, it's Osterland. And I'm going to drive back. I'm going to drive back later this morning because I got a lot of work to get through this weekend.
Okay.
Yeah, it's just
all right. It got boring at that time, point. You were doing so well with Os Durant.
Well, everything comes to an end. Even meeting Os. It's so funny. He walks in and you hear these drugs like nerdling their brandy and coke. Says, yes, he's big. Hey, look at him. It's Os. It's Os. And the one guy's like Os. Like, yo, 95 Rugby World Cup. I will never leave this country. Ever.
No, it's great. It's the best. It absolutely is. All right. Thanks, Ben. Have a lekker day. Thank you for the sport morning and all the rest of it. And I'm sorry you had to sit through my ranting and raving for the first 20 minutes of the show this morning. By the way, if you'd like to hear more of that, then drop us an email or like and subscribe, just like we were complaining about earlier this morning. So do all of that. Get involved. Thanks, Ben.
All right, guys.
All right. Get a question here from Bitcoin Butt this morning. Gareth, what are your predictions when it comes to the American ambassador? Will he overcome the majority? So the new American ambassador is a guy called Brett Bozell. He's Trump's appointment, and he arrived probably about 3 weeks ago in South Africa. His first public speaking engagement was at Alec Hogg's BizNews conference in Hermanus, and he said a couple of things, none of which should come as a surprise to anybody. He's saying what Donald Trump's already said. He's Trump's guy, and apparently Durko called him in because they didn't like some of the comments, and they asked him to apologize. I've heard that he's apologized. I don't know what that means, but that doesn't mean that America's point of view is going to change here. And I just don't see any reason for this to be adversarial. Everybody knows we can only benefit from American business with South Africa. We should be doing whatever we can to repair that relationship. It's not as if America is turning us into Venezuela. They're not sending in troops and taking over. They want to be able to deal with a country in good faith. And you can't deal with a country in good faith if you don't know that your property rights are respected, for example. So I think the ambassador is going to be fine. I think he'll carry on. He's got a term of office that will last probably all the way to the end of Trump's term. And he has a clear mandate. The one thing he said that I was surprised by, and maybe you were too, is that South Africa is in the top 10 countries that Trump has prioritized. He's very interested in us, and he wants to do trade, and he wants to make deals with South Africa. So, guys, wake up. This is an opportunity. This is like when someone knocks on your door and offers to get into business with you, and they've got a really good plan, and you can work well together, and you go, nah, you know, I'm waiting for Santa Claus. It's just, this is stupid. We've got to get in there. I find Brent Bozell very charming, says Congo Chris. He's a smart guy. I mean, he's got a media background. He's been a businessman in private business for a very long time. Successful guy, made plenty of money. And he's not an idiot. I mean, you can hear from the way he talks, this guy's smart. So underestimate him at your peril. If you could tell me anyone at Durko who you hold in high regard, I'd be thrilled to know who that might be. Durko, our South African Department of International Relations and Cooperation, have made every mistake you can make when it comes to foreign relations. They have backed the fucking losing horse in every race. They have friends in all the wrong places and enemies where you don't want enemies. Durko have taken what was, and I'll give credit here to someone who we've mostly made fun of on the show, but Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma was a Minister of Foreign Affairs when it was still called Foreign Affairs, and she did a pretty damn decent job. The rot started with Maite Nkwana Mashabane. Remember her? And it just got worse and worse. Then Naledi Pandor was in there. And Naledi Pandor had a bug in her ass because she's married to a guy who was clearly Muslim, and she needed to back Hamas and Hezbollah and every bad actor in the Middle East. That didn't help us. And then this American situation. I mean, you know, this is like you're a small furry creature in the forest, and you want to make friends with all the predators that want to eat you. This doesn't make sense at all. Anyway, let's see what happens there. Let us get to Mash, because Bitcoin Boot says, whatever happened to Mapelo? Did you replace him with Mash? No, Mash was never in the comments section. Mash was always on the show. And if Mash isn't on this show, then and you're not following him on social media, you are missing out. This guy is not messing around anymore. Jesus, you're on fire on social media at the moment. What's happening with you? You've become a proper celebrity on there.
Yo, Gareth, all I'm doing is just my YouTube content. I've been minding my business.
Life you made your brother famous.
Yes, my brother. Oh, my
brother.
You
wanted to be famous. You've done it for him.
Yo, Gareth.
That's what brothers are for.
I've been helping him out a lot, but he's just frustrating me at the moment.
Why?
My little brother.
Why?
So he's been wanting an iPhone for quite some time.
Oh, boy.
As you know, iPhone is like the in thing. And
how old is he now?
He is 21.
Okay, he's not a teenager or anything.
Yeah, he's not a teenager at all. So he's been wanting an iPhone.
And I mean, in Klerksdorp, he'd be the only guy with an iPhone. Let's be fair, right? He would.
He'd be one of five people.
Nah, five. Yeah, five.
Five, I mean, at most.
And we're talking an iPhone, what, 12?
he got a 13. Like, okay, he got a reasonable phone. Yeah,
that in Klerksdorp, that is a fucking Maserati.
Oh, it is. It straight up is. So, yeah, he's been wanting this phone for quite some time. And cool. So we helped him out, you know, to get the phone. And then he got the phone. He got it about 3 weeks ago. And then 2 weeks ago, I went home. He only owned the phone for maybe 5 days.
Uh-oh.
And it was really cracked up, and a brand new phone. He had already cracked it up and messed it all up in just 5 days.
Okay, now that would frustrate the hell out of me too. I don't blame you. I'd be pissed off. So even an iPhone 13 now must cost more than...
It's about maybe 9-10 grand.
Yeah, that's a lot.
You can't find it brand new.
I would have said it would cost more than 5, but closer to 10, right?
Yes, closer to 10.
And obviously he's never had a job.
He's never had a job, yeah.
He doesn't know how much money that is.
Yeah.
But this is just so irritating for you because you put up the cash, effectively.
Yeah, my dad and I.
Right.
Yeah.
And you bought this fucker a phone,
mm-hmm.
and now he's broken it. Does it work at all, or is it just the screen's cracked? And
Because
you can Fong Kong it, hey? You can go to one of those shops. Yeah. Where there's those Pakistani irks and they'll fix it for
you. They'll fix it up quick. And they did. So
pour glue in the cracks.
Yeah. So he just had R1,000. He was able to take the phone to go get fixed quickly. Okay. And thank goodness these Pakistani guys were able to fix it for him.
Yeah.
But like it's all dented and stuff like that. And I was like, okay, how did you break this phone? And he's like, no, I was in my bedroom. I was like, what were you doing in your bedroom?
Throwing it at the wall?
Literally, it had a big fat dent on the corner. I was like, what were you doing in your bedroom? With the cell phone. So that just absolutely frustrated me.
Is that the truth or did you just leave it at that?
I just left it at that. And it's not the first phone, by the way. Okay. I've given my little brother 3 phones in total. Another iPhone, 2 Mobicells. And then obviously we contributed to this iPhone as well. Every single phone has always been broken. And it's always been a case of, no, the phone is cheap. The phone is cheap. It's not me. It's the phone. Why y'all are getting me cheap phones?
Oh, boy.
So for once, we're like, okay, let's get you a phone that's not so cheap and see what you do.
Well, that was your mistake.
Ah, yeah.
Never again, right?
Yeah, never again. I'm sure you've encountered such people, Gareth. Those people you give them stuff, you try to do good things for them, but they always somehow mess it up.
I mean, with trying to be the devil's advocate here, if I think back to how I was in my early 20s, I got my first phone. It was a piece of shit, but...
Yeah.
But I lost, you know, when you're young and stupid, we all have been, right? Nobody gets it right 100% of the time.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm trying to be a little forgiving here, and I'm trying to think back to the fact that I lost, I think it was 2 phones.
Ah.
But they were cheap shit phones because they didn't have iPhones, and I'm so old that they were the first kinds of phones that came out in South Africa that were cellular mobile telephones, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think it was probably second year varsity or something.
Okay.
And then the iPhone came out probably about 4 or 5 years after that.
Yeah.
But these were, you know, cheap as they were still, for me as a student who didn't have money, it was still expensive. And I reckon by phone number 3, I remember. You become responsible.
Yeah.
It's like you leave shit lying around when you're in your 20s. You don't think about where you put your phone down or,
certainly,
you know, all your stuff. And then often you lose things or they get stolen from you.
Certainly.
So I want to be a little forgiving to him. but Vyasan says after the second phone, you should have stopped MASH. You're creating drama. That's what you're doing.
I've come to realize now that all I am creating is drama. But at the end of the day, he said he needed the phone. And I even asked him, like, why do you need the phone? Why do you need the phone? He's like, no, I also want to make content like you. I also want to.
Oh boy.
So once he got the phone, I was like, okay, where's the content? Where is the content?
He's not doing anything.
He did put out some content, Gareth. I don't even want to share what content he's putting out. Oh my gosh, Gareth. Gareth, like, I feel like he's going to get arrested if I share what my little brother has been putting out there.
Uh-oh. No, well, give me what? Illegal stuff?
It's not illegal stuff.
Embarrassing.
Well, I don't think it's illegal.
Is it embarrassing?
It's fake news.
Oh, shit.
Gareth, he's been putting out fake news.
Like, what kind of fake news?
His most biggest post is is a RIP poster of Rebecca Malope with her song playing. Rebecca Malope is fine and well.
She's alive.
She's fine and well. That's his biggest post. Oh my gosh. I'm sure people watching this have seen it. It got so like 20,000 likes.
He's telling blatant lies.
He's telling blatant lies and people are fighting his comments. That's how he's farming for engagement.
To target someone as lovely as Rebecca Malope, I mean, how dare he? That woman's a national treasure.
She legit is.
Yeah.
So I was just like, wait. I went through his page on TikTok and I was like, wait, where did he get like 3,000 something followers in like a
Fake
month?
News.
Meanwhile, he's been running a whole little fake news syndicate on TikTok.
CNN should be watching him for the latest fake news. I love it.
Literally, if you search RIP Rebecca Malope, you'll see my little brother's post. I am just...
Please don't search it, people. You're just going to push up his numbers.
Don't. Please don't.
You're going to push up his numbers, then he's going to keep fabricating bullshit. And then Mash is going to end up in jail, because that's always how it works. The person who's responsible ends up being the one who carries the can. If you have an unlicensed car on our roads, you don't get arrested, because they don't know who it is.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, yo, Gareth, that's what I'm dealing with at the moment. And I don't know. Like, why Rebecca? I don't know. I have so many questions myself. But either way, I'm just looking
on. Fake news. I can't believe this. The guy's doing fake news. Oh, my God. Let's discuss those videos on the show. Well, maybe. Somebody says here, you must stop enabling the irresponsible little fucker. That's from Trevor. Someone's asking, is it OnlyFans? Because you can't really point fingers there.
No, it's definitely not OnlyFans.
Yeah, good. Mash, get your brother on the show, says Bitcoin Boot. My friend wants to know if you are single by any chance, Mash, says Limited Edition.
I am Limited Edition. Tell all your friends.
Okay.
Yeah.
How's your thirst trapping going?
I've been slowing down at the thirst trapping. You know, I've been focusing fully and totally on myself.
Yes.
Lately, I just don't have time for anything apart from my YouTube channel, Gareth. I'm just channeling away, shooting content, editing. Yo, I'd never realized how much work it is. Like, literally just talking and editing and producing and all of this stuff. So that's been my life. There's been nothing else. Absolutely nothing else.
But you do have another job.
Well, I do have a job as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, my job is good. My job is good. But YouTube is where my attention is.
Do they know what a celebrity you are on YouTube?
No.
Okay, keep it that way.
Nobody knows. I've been keeping it a secret. Nobody even on social media knows that I'm YouTubing.
Oh.
Because I feel like people on social media hate me at the moment. I feel like they hate me. I don't know why.
Really?
Yeah.
It could be all those things you said about fat people.
I think it might be that.
I think that's got a lot to do with it.
But you know what's crazy is that I'm saying the exact same shit on YouTube.
Yeah.
They're loving me.
Yeah.
They're absolutely slurping it up.
Yeah, social media is there is no sense of humor. There's no nuance there. And everybody, they want to fight.
Like, yeah.
People want to, they get a kick out of fighting.
Oh, they do.
Right?
They certainly do.
They want to argue with you. They want to say, you're wrong, I'm right. Mm. And YouTube, I think they're just there for the entertainment.
YouTube people are like, look, it's not that deep. We know that you're kind of a good person and we're just here to be entertained. While on social media, most people aren't even angry by what some of the things I'm saying. They just see other people being upset in the comments and they're like, oh, we're upset too.
Slippery Pickle says, I'm going to help Mash his brother by telling him that the deep state has replaced Rebecca with a clone. Let's up those views. Yes, so you want to cause trouble in Mash's household, hey? That's going to be such a mess.
Like, my mother literally called me and said, your little brother is posting garbage there on social media. He's posting garbage.
But he's out of control, right?
He's out of control, Gareth. I'm so worried. I'm so legitimately worried about it.
I'm kind of excited. I don't know why you're worried. It's going to be very entertaining for the rest of us. I mean, your family, you'll all end up in jail. But luckily, your dad knows how that works. So you should be all right, huh?
At least we'll be social. We'll be very popular, my family and I.
Yeah, sure. Okay, so I want to talk about something else that Mash has brought to my attention. I didn't know about this. You know, you're an expert on property prices in Oranje.
Oh, Gareth.
I didn't know that you were a property prices in Oranje
expert.
I'm
not an expert.
Is this what you're doing on YouTube? Are you doing that estate agent shit that I've been complaining about for the last 3 weeks? I hope not.
No, not at all. I actually bought a clip of what I've been doing on YouTube.
Oh.
I'll get the guys to
play it. We must play that. Okay, but first, let's deal with Oranje quickly.
Yeah, so It came across my feed yesterday, yesterday evening. Okay. I was minding my business. And then next thing you know, I'm on Twitter, scrolling, catching up with the day. And someone goes, have y'all seen the property prices in Orania? And I go, okay, it can't be that hectic. I mean, Orania, probably decent property prices. Like, Gareth, how much is a actually, let's start off with a one-bedroom apartment in Joburg, average.
Okay, where in Joburg? In Gauteng. It's Sandton?
Let's see, Sandton.
You're probably talking.
I think you're talking 1.5, like a million.
2 million.
1.5,
in
2 Sandton, million.
Yeah, I reckon it's probably that.
Okay, and then.
For a nice one.
Yeah. Okay, actually, let's say out of Sandton, because Orania is not a Sandton.
Okay, then let's say it's probably about a million.
A million.
Maybe even 800,000. Maybe even 800,000. Yeah. You could probably find a decent enough.
Somewhere around there.
One bedroom, yeah.
I'd think so as well, yeah. Okay. But the properties in Orania, the prices are crazy. Absolutely insane. The one bedroom. In Orania. Producer James, please pull up the image because the one bedroom in Orania costs 1,100,000. And there it is.
For that piece of shit.
That is the one bedroom apartment that costs 1.1 million rand.
Wow. Okay. So then this means that property is in demand there.
Oh, clearly.
It seems like it is a seller's market if you can charge 1.1 million for that.
It is absolutely
People are
insane.
Moving into Orania. Look at that.
Look at 1. That.
1.1 million rand for a one-bedroom house.
One bathroom.
Yes. Is it an inside bathroom or outside?
No, it's an inside bathroom. They have plumbing, apparently. At least they're up to date
so
with the times.
That place in... I mean, it's very, it's not a hospitable part
Where
of the
Where is
country.
It exactly? Is it like in the middle of nowhere?
It's in the Northern Cape.
Northern Cape?
Yeah.
Didn't we sell it to Namibia?
No.
Oh.
No, it's not prime land by any stretch of the imagination. In fact, it's remarkable what they've done there because it's not a significantly fertile part of the country.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have any special... minerals, it doesn't have any natural resources that are remarkable. Mm.
Clearly, because, I mean, even, I'm sure there's no minerals there.
Yeah.
The food they're eating is clearly affecting their brains.
I know someone who's just recently, or in the last year, been there.
Mm. What?
And, and he said, he went to visit. And he said, it is the safest place you can leave. We talk about your brother losing his phone. You can leave your phone.
Mm-hmm.
In a restaurant, you can come back 5 hours later, and they'll either give it back to you or it'll still be on the table. He says, no crime.
Okay.
There's
okay.
no bullshit. People treat each other with respect. It's not just white people like a lot of people think.
It's Afrikaans. I've seen black people.
You're hardly likely to speak much English or Xhosa or Zulu or anything there, but you will speak Afrikaans.
Mm.
But this guy told me, he said it is... It's not paradise because there is no such thing.
Yes. And apparently everybody has to work for their
You
keep.
Have to work, sure. But that's what it is to be alive and human, you know?
Yes.
And it's safe and it's clean and everything works in the town. There are no potholes. They are organized.
Don't they use like Monopoly money or something?
I don't know anything about
or Monopoly.
Don't they have their own currency?
Yes.
But like you can pay in rands or you could, you know. It doesn't really make a difference, but
wow,
it's a self-contained thing and it works. So I don't know why, if anybody has a problem with that, they don't start their own and see if they can make the same thing happen.
Absolutely.
You know, if these guys can do it in that part of the Northern Cape, then good for them. And if they can sell that place for 1.1 million.
Yo, Gareth. Bonane.
You've taught me something this morning.
I have some more pictures of houses from Orania. Producer James.
Okay. All right. This is great. This goes well with our estate agent bitching and moaning last week. Now, I can't really see the house, but that doesn't look impressive
this
either.
This is basically 3.6 million. And this is also a... What is it? I think it was a one-bedroom house, if I wasn't mistaken.
It's a farm. It's their farm
for
sale.
Yeah, so you're getting 10,000 square meters of land.
I don't know what you would grow there. Again, maybe it's better on this farm, more fertile than the rest of Orania, but maybe you could grow a bit of citrus. Those look like citrus trees.
Yeah,
the house is not impressive, though, Mash.
Well, the house is nothing. The house is literally a shack. You're just paying for the land, really.
So 4 million, almost, well, 3.5, 4 million rand.
Yeah.
For that farm.
For that farm.
It's probably not that big.
It is absolutely crazy. So there's so many different types of houses there, but most of them are made of metal.
That house, okay, that's a slightly bigger house.
Yeah, this is a, what is it, 2-bedroom, 2-bathroom.
You've really done your research, eh?
Yeah, this house is literally made of metal all the way. It looks like a barn.
I'm imagining Mash putting all his shit in the car, saying to his family, I'm moving to Oranje. I'm not out of my... buying my brother any more fucking phones.
I'm done. Once my family is being chased by the cops because of the lies about Rebecca Malope, I'm moving to Oranje. I'm getting off the grid. I'm going to live in that 1 million rand one bedroom.
Mash, I can tell you something. They have that the majority of Joburg doesn't have, and they have water.
Ooh,
yeah,
yes.
Because Joburg has no, well, there are parts of Joburg that still have no water.
I didn't have water yesterday. Just for the day, though.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Murphy's on TV. That is why the world is in the gutter, says Kurt. Kurt.
Hey, Bo.
Are you living in 1923? Hi.
I mean, Kurt can't even, he couldn't even, like
what's going on with you?
He's like, I just have to type.
I think Kurt might have, he might have stumbled on our show by mistake. And you will give you a minute to leave. There we go. Okay, Kurt's gone. We won't shed a tear about that either. James, look up a 2-bedroom in Vredehoek in Cape Town. Do that quickly. Okay, so we've got very expensive properties in Oranje.
We have some really expensive ones. Not expensive as Cape Town.
I mean,
but it's insanely
you
expensive.
You will get cheaper places in Joburg. The same amount of space in Joburg you can find cheaper. And you wouldn't think that just on the basis that Joburg's this huge city and Oranje is this little town.
Exactly. In the middle of nowhere. But of course, you are paying for the community. It's basically a price of entry in Oranje. So it does make sense.
Slippery Pickle says, I'm getting married to Casper de Vries and I'm moving to Oranje.
Oh, wow.
But then he says, that's what you should say. then I want to move to Sandton. Mash, is it worthwhile to stay in Sandton? Kindly advise, says Limited Edition. Limited Edition, full of questions about you being single and should he move to Sandton? So let's give him advice on Sandton.
I lived in Sandton. I don't live in Sandton at the moment. But yeah, Sandton is, it's worthwhile living in Sandton. You're close to everything, you know, and it's just convenient. Yeah, especially if you're single.
Yvonne Kutsia says the water in Oranje is the best in the world and you drink it out of the tap. Magazem Pompin.
Don't we all drink water from taps?
Yeah, I mean, Joburg water's, when it works, it's actually fine.
It's pretty good,
We actually have pretty good water when it works.
Absolutely.
But I'd imagine any of those small towns where you have a borehole, you get that really good...
good water.
Yeah, that's good shit. So I'm sure that Oranje would compete with the best in the world. I also think that we haven't seen any houses that I would want to live in so far. Did you look at more expensive houses?
I looked at all the houses.
Do they not?
They're not really impressive. They all have one thing in common. All the houses in Oranje. So much closet space. So much closet space. I was shocked. I was like, how much clothes?
What do you think that means?
I don't know.
What do you think that's all about?
I have no clue. What are they hiding
no
in these closets?
No double stories. They're no all single story.
They're all single story. Most of them are made of metal. And some of them literally are asbestos houses. A lot of them are actually asbestos houses.
Ooh, but
similar
that's
to
dangerous.
The American ones.
That, asbestos.
Yeah.
That's not good.
It doesn't look very fabulous.
You sure
I'm not
about that?
Lie.
Maybe just drywalling. Not asbestos.
Yeah, maybe,
I don't think
maybe
you're allowed to build asbestos anymore.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it definitely was drywalling. Drywalling instead.
Yeah. Okay. Well, look at that. 1.5. Guys, that's a very small house. That looks like two containers that have been pushed together.
Look at that house. And it's all sheet metal. It's all metal.
It's a 2-bedroom for 1.5 million.
Made of metal.
I'm fascinated that you have unlocked an entire world of information I'd never paid any attention to.
It is absolutely
the
shocking.
Property prices in Oranje.
I didn't even know that there was. I didn't even know they listed on Property 24.
Okay. Well, you've taught us all something here.
There we go.
Bitcoin Boots says the closet space is for all the slavery memorabilia. Okay, all right. Enough of that. I want to get to a big issue that we've spoken about on the show before.
Yes.
We know Leanne is on the stuff. We know lots of people, celebrities that are on it. We've got to talk about Ozempic.
Ooh, Gareth.
What did you think I was going to say? Because you looked very concerned when I said Leanne's on it. You were like, oh, that crack cocaine again. Show them the picture of that man from the 1800s. Hard drugs have been here a long time. Take a look at this guy. He's definitely in hard drugs.
Oh, my goodness.
Right?
He looks like a lizard. That's
what the hell's going on there?
That is terrifying.
That's either heroin or crack cocaine, and that's in the 1800s.
Oh, my word.
We're not talking about that, but we're talking about Ozempic.
Yeah. What's happening with Ozempic?
Well, everybody who's on it is starting to look a bit odd. First, before we show you these celebrities,
okay.
I want you to watch this. This is a video I stumbled upon the other day. I think Ozempic is really screwing with people. You know, nothing is for free, hey?
Of course, there's no free lunch.
Except for your brother, of course, who gets free food. But nothing is for free in this world. So everything that's worthwhile, you have to work for.
Certainly.
There is no magic pill that'll make you happy.
Mm-hmm.
There's no magic pill that'll make you in love. Mm-hmm. There's no magic pill that'll make you rich. Mm-hmm. And there's no magic pill that'll make you fit and healthy.
Certainly.
Most of that you still have to do yourself. And many people who are on Ozempic acknowledge that. So I'm not fighting with them. Yes. I also think if you're morbidly obese, you need all the help you can get.
Certainly, yeah.
And I'm not against Ozempic. But I did joke right at the beginning that I'm a little bitter and twisted about the fact that we have to work hard to stay in shape and to get in shape and to not be fat. And, you know, it's tough.
It's tough.
I mean, you've walked this journey very publicly.
Yes. It's a lot of work.
And I feel like these people in some ways are taking a shortcut. Well, certainly some of them are, like the Hollywood kinds.
Okay.
But if you're an obese, if you're a morbidly obese person and you get on Ozempic, I don't have a fight with you.
Certainly. Yeah.
Right. Watch this video and then we'll talk about this. And I want to hear what you think in the comments too. So if you haven't joined in this conversation yet, this is where we need you to jump in. And I see already Zelna's got stuff to say. Ivan, Koketso. So let's take a look at this first and you tell me what you think.
If you're planning to lose 5 to 10 pounds, your facial aesthetics will change. And that's a huge problem because all of these drugs work
in the short term, but long term, people are stuck on them. You look skinny, older, and without a butt.
And now your face is deflated. If you turn it at an angle and somebody takes a high-res image, compares before and after, they lost mid-face fat.
Which is the worst.
I said, you know what? I do 100% of the time now is I take care of women's breasts. I don't do faces anymore. I don't dabble in these things. If I'm the younger version of me, I should be getting my fat grafting.
Marketing this Ozempic face solution because fat done right is the only answer that I can even see right now.
Yo.
So those guys obviously are plastic surgeons. They were talking about how you need face fat.
Yeah.
Not enormous amounts of face fat, but if you get that gaunt look, and we'll show you some pictures now of who we're talking about.
Yo.
You might have seen some of these people. This is why people are starting to say Ozempic face is a real thing. And Ozempic face is the price you pay for being thin.
Mm-hmm.
Everything has a cost. So here, you wondered what it was. We all thought, oh, miracle drug.
Yeah.
Finally, everybody can be thin. We don't have to feel bad about ourselves. Mm. We don't have to be unhealthy. We don't have to go and spend hours and hours at the gym. And, you know, we can eat whatever we want. We'll just eat less of it because we won't have an appetite. But here's the Ozempic. It's going to sort everything out. Well, take a look at this.
El Ozempic face es real. Vean, por favor, todos estos rostros cómo quedan después de administrarse, en teoría, Ozempic. ¿Qué opinas? ¿Se ven bien?
Yeah, okay. So those are just a few of them. But what most people are talking about is two extremely strange appearances that happened in Hollywood in the last couple of days.
Okay.
Do you know who I'm talking about?
The Osborne ladies.
Yes. Okay, so you saw Sharon in that clip and you would have seen Jessica Simpson. My God, she looks... Yes. I mean, Jessica Simpson, as far as I remember, I thought she was really, really hot once.
Yeah, nobody ever thought she was never not hot.
She looks like Skeletor now.
And, yes,
and
she does.
Look, Sharon's older and... You know, when you get to a certain age, you don't have any face fat left because you're basically, you know, you're like 5
You're also out of elastin, so your skin sags now.
So I'm not going to knock Sharon too hard, but Kelly, the daughter, is one of the people you have to see. She came up actually on the show last week while we were talking about this. And then I got this picture. Show them the before and after. I mean, this is a hell of a transformation.
How's she looking? Our girl Kelly Osborne.
Sus.
Ha! That's not the same person, Gareth.
It doesn't even look like the same person.
That is not the same person. And you know, like, there's a healthy skinny. This is not a healthy skinny.
Yeah, okay, look, both of those are appalling. You just kind of wonder. I believe Ozempic, you get put on, and again, we're going to get a doctor to talk about this because I don't know the details. I've never been on the Ozempic. Someone offered that I should go on it once, and I thought, nah.
Gareth, the thing is, let me tell you, I've been on GLP-1s. I'm not on them anymore.
Okay.
I got skinny fat. I got too skinny myself.
Well, this is what I want to ask, is you can obviously overdo anything.
You can,
right? So easily. There are people who take more of whatever meds they're on than they have to. And and I think what's happened here, if you look at Kelly Osborne there, neither of those pictures are great. She's not the world's most ugly person in either of them, but she's just frightening on the right. And on the left, she just looks like any other slob.
Each side is an extreme.
I just think she stopped.
She was at some point.
Like, she could have been at stop the train at the right station and get off.
Certainly.
Don't keep traveling on the train. Mm. I think they get it. You know, maybe some of these things are body dysmorphia related or it's a mental health issue.
Definitely,
I think
mental health, yeah.
People start looking in the mirror and they're like, I look thin.
I can push it further. I can push it further.
I can keep going. Yeah.
Yeah. You always feel like you're not skinny enough.
So the Osborne women, and particularly Kelly was one of them. There are two others, actually.
Another Demi one, Moore?
Demi Moore.
Oh,
that's
I saw
correct.
Her.
Did you see what she looked like? Okay, have you got a picture of her?
She looks like Skeletor.
Okay, we'll find a picture of Demi Moore. But she...
Mm.
I mean, look, obviously she's been through a lot lately. She's also getting older and I'm not unforgiving about the fact that you change as you get older. We've discussed this a million times on the show. We've said that there are people who can look good. Like, look at Cher, okay? Cher's had a lot of plastic surgery.
Yes.
She's in her late 70s now.
Ah.
If not her early 80s.
Damn.
She still jumps on stage and sings and dances, and she doesn't look that different. I really don't think she looks that different to how she looked 20, 30 years ago.
Yeah.
She's older, but she doesn't look completely different like Kelly Osborne did. And Demi Moore, again, just very, very scarily, unhealthily thin. Do you know who the third one is?
I have no clue.
Hmm.
Who else could it be?
If this woman walked past you and you didn't look carefully, you wouldn't think it was who it is. And I'll show you who that is.
Is it Mindy Kaling? Because I know she had the Ozempic parties
in
Hollywood.
Way more famous. Way more famous. Very important famous.
I can't think of anyone.
The queen of talk TV.
Oprah.
Yeah.
Oprah. Is Oprah skinny now?
Have a look. She done look like a homeless person on the right. She's like a crack addict.
What? She's not showing much of her body, but she's looking
but
hella thin.
You see the faces changed.
Yes.
See what's happened there?
She looks like a bobblehead.
Yes. And she's walking there with... have you got the video of her? Oh. Yeah, see if you can find that video, James, because that is something to see. Look, again, she's also getting older, and she's always wanted to be thin. Because Oprah, remember, she went through this yo-yo, like one show you'd see her, she was like a house. The next show you'd see her, she was thin. She's always had an unhealthy relationship with her own body, I would say.
Yeah,
and many people do. It's not just Oprah.
Yeah, it's not just Oprah. Yeah,
but she did go on The View or one of those TV shows a while ago, and she said, being fat is not in the genes. It's a social construct or something like that.
She said, I remember what she said.
She made some excuse. It's not her responsibility.
Yeah.
It's just an unfair thing that nature's put on her.
She said basically there's a thing called the obesity gene.
Oh, right.
And that's what causes you to eat and become fat. It's not you becoming obese and that's a result.
I didn't know that. I forgot that that was what she said, but I knew it was bullshit.
It is
Everybody
bullshit.
Does. There's no such thing as an obesity gene.
There's no such thing.
But she was saying on this talk show, and thank you for remembering correctly what she said, that it's not her fault. And that basically Ozempic and all these GLP-1s, they give people the ability to not have to worry about
that. Don't worry about your obesity gene.
It affects, as we found out from Johan Hari all those months ago, when I interviewed him, it's probably about a year and a half now, when he wrote his book, The Magic Pill. And he said, what it does is it decreases your desire to eat.
It does. You literally do not want to eat. In fact, food kind of repulses you even. But when I was taking my GLP-1, I took really slim, which is an oral, which I put it in my mouth.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm glad you know what oral is.
So I took this for about, not even a year. I took it for about 8 months. Yeah. And how I took it was I'd have to take 2 capsules in the morning, and then it'll last me up until midday. Midday, you take 1 capsule. It's 90 capsules in a bottle. They last you a month. So it's 3 capsules a day.
How much does it cost you?
$300 a month.
Oh, okay. That's for the script. It's like this Ozempic is way more expensive.
Yeah.
Right?
In fact, the Really Slim got the job done. Although the thing with Really Slim is you have to keep taking it orally. But the problem was...
Did it change your shitting?
A lot. Because I was... Gareth, I was eating every second day. I wasn't even eating every day.
So you were very regular.
I was not even. I was not going to the bathroom. I was not going to the bathroom at all because I was eating every second day.
Oh, wow. So there was just nothing to...
There was nothing. Yeah, I pushed it to the limit. Hence, I lost weight like so quick in such a short period of time.
Were there any negative effects for you?
For me, I became skinny fat. So I was skinny, but I still had fat hanging. I actually had loose skin. And I did research of, okay, what can I do? What cream can I use to get rid of this loose skin? And honestly, online, it all said the same thing. It said you have to fill the loose skin with something. That's what it said. So I said, okay, so now what do I have to fill it with? What? It said muscle. So that's when I started lifting weights. And my butt, for example, I had a loose, sagging butt, Gareth.
Oh, how revolting.
Beginning of last year. Absolutely.
That's
revolting.
What I've had all my life. A loose, saggy butt. Now you know my pain.
So when I started squatting and lifting weights and prioritizing protein and learning about nutrition, that's when I was able to fill out my butt. I was able to fill out every single part of me that was sagging. Even my chest was sagging a bit. I was able to fill it out.
You now got a Sarki Bartman going on there.
Now I've got a little hot, Sarah Bartman back there. So I had to do the research and I had to fill myself out. You have to fill your body out. If you're taking these GLP-1s, you need to be lifting weights. You need to be prioritizing eating protein and lifting weights, or else you'll be skinny fat and you're literally going to fade away.
Judas says that the Ozempic face and body look similar to pictures I used to see in magazines when teens were being taught about anorexia. Yeah.
Mm.
Have you got the Demi Moore? Oh, there's Oprah. Check how
she
shuffles.
Why is she walking so
fast? Wow, she shuffles. And look at Gail behind is also shuffling like
Why
that.
Why are they shuffling around like that?
Because they're old ladies, I suppose. That's not the Ozempic, but...
Oh, okay.
It's I don't know. It's just...
Mm.
Stop at the station that you want to get off. When you look... Okay, now I've got the right mix of fat and thin.
Yes.
I'm just in a good place. You
can and then
see
build
my
facial muscle.
Expressions. Yeah.
Yeah, and then build muscle. Because at the end of the day, what people don't realize about these GLP-1s is by not eating for such extended periods of time or eating so little, you're not only losing weight, Gareth, you're also losing muscle mass. And muscle mass is what actually keeps you okay for so long. It's what keeps you mobile for so long. It's what keeps you energized into your 60s, having muscle mass. And that's why some people, they literally retire from their jobs and they retire at 65, at 68 they pass away. Because they have no muscle mass. They were just sitting all day. They didn't exercise. The most amount of exercise they did was walking to the printer.
Apparently, that's really important, especially as you get older.
It's so important
to keep up
your
muscle mass. I mean, that shuffle that Oprah and Gail are doing in that video, you know, it's a thing you see a lot of old people doing.
Certainly.
And someone called it the Biden shuffle in the comment section. But, I mean, he famously, like he fell down the stairs or up the stairs 3 or 4 times and... You're just unsteady and you start getting that like sunken cheek look.
Yes.
It's not good.
It's a real thing. Yeah.
And you can do something about it. It's not a death sentence.
That's the thing. You can absolutely do something about it. Just build muscle, prioritize eating protein, and you'll be good for so long.
Mash, have you seen Squatmaster from South Africa?
Yes.
Is that a guy, person?
Yeah, the guy who he plays Zulu music, and then he's squatting. He has a big dump truck.
But like, oh, right.
His ass is too big. It's not like appealing big. It's like, whoa.
James, get us some footage of Squatmaster. We need to see who this person is. Everybody in the comment section is going crazy for Squatmaster. So it was Demi. It was Oprah. There's Demi Moore. Look at that.
No. Look at her.
And you know, she's got that front on the dress, which I think is hiding, like, you would see the rib cage.
Yes.
For sure. You could see them under her armpit there.
She got a facelift at some point.
Yeah, and listen, even that, I've got to say, maybe one out of every 10 facelifts is a tremendous success.
Yes.
You know, where someone looks significantly younger or they look good for their age because of a facelift. And I'm not against it. Again, I have no right to tell anyone else what to do with their body. If you do want to do what Demi Moore has done or what Kelly Osbourne has done, you go ahead. Whatever makes you happy, because you have to live in that body. You have to live with that face. But I have seen people who didn't need to have plastic surgery.
Oh, yes.
You know, like young people, like beautiful girls who didn't need to do anything. And they, for some reason, they got it into their head. Maybe they have horrible friends who told them something and it got stuck there. And you know how insecure some people get?
Yes.
And then they started fucking up their hair and getting surgery done and getting piercings and things
all
they don't need.
Things. Yeah.
Like, don't do it. You're doing permanent damage.
Gareth, surgeries have become so easily accessible. From facelifts to veneers, there's veneer techs out there.
Yeah.
There's so many things out there. All this medical stuff that costs a fortune is becoming so much more accessible. And people are also taking shortcuts.
Congo Chris says, Demi looks like one of those monsters from A Quiet Place.
Ah. You know what the issues with these facelifts, Gareth, is that you can lift your face, but the rest of your body can't be lifted.
Yeah, and it's the neck.
The neck and the hands give you away.
Even in the Demi pic, if you can pop that back up quickly. Sorry to go back to Demi Moore, but you see how the neck, you can't really hide. And also there where the clavicle joins the scapula,
you know,
the shoulder and the collarbone.
Yes, it gives it away.
That doesn't look good. That looks like a badly put together kids playset, you know?
And the hands, the arms,
and
the hands.
Yeah, guys, there is nothing wrong
with aging.
Yeah, and especially I know that places like Hollywood and particularly pop culture and social media and TikTok and all this stuff, it celebrates youth.
Mm.
You know, being young is the greatest.
Yes.
And if you're young and you're beautiful, you're winning. And that may be true for some people who are really, really good looking and are in their 20s and they've got a good head on their shoulders.
Mm.
But I would not swap back to my 20s for anything. I say that without any particular provocation. I haven't been thinking about this especially hard.
Yeah.
But I look at Demi Moore and I think, holy shit, she still is. She's good looking. Don't get
she
me
is.
Wrong. Her plastic surgeon didn't do a horrible job, so I don't think she overdid it.
Yes.
She's overdone it on the weight loss, but she hasn't overdone it with the face. And I just think, you don't need Demi, you've won at that game.
Mm.
Once you've won at something, then you stop playing that game. You find another game.
Exactly.
But, and you are a very, very talented woman.
Mm.
Apparently she's been an amazing wife. I don't know if they're still married or if she's looked after him, but you know, Bruce Willis got very ill.
Yes.
And she looked after him, and she really put in an enormous amount of effort there. And I think they were divorced, and then she decided to, like, because they've got kids together.
Yes.
Get back involved. She seems like a good person.
Yeah, she does.
Famous movie actress, rather. She's done lots of successful movies.
Yeah.
I don't see why she feels the need. If you're at her age, she must be 60, 70,
somewhere around there,
right?
Yeah.
If you are her, so get fat.
Exactly.
The hell, if you feel like having a cake at her age, she's earned the cake.
Yeah.
Right? And if she's got another 20 years to live, She can afford a little bit of cake.
Easily.
Don't feel bad. Demi.
Yeah, she's 63.
Have a go. No one's going to go, ha, that Demi. You know, it's like the Madonna syndrome of like you always need to be eternally young. It's just nonsense. Yeah. Madonna should now be a bit more like a Gran.
Mm. I would say either allow yourself to age gracefully and be remembered as the legend that you were.
Yeah.
Or try to be relevant for long enough physically that you end up dying a villain. That people end up saying, oh, did you see how she was in her last... People, that becomes your legacy at the end of the day. Look at the likes of... I don't want to use Michael Jackson as an example. But, I mean, you always hear what people say about Michael Jackson.
Yeah, but, you know, he... Well, because of the plastic surgery.
Because of the surgery, but not because of the vitiligo.
And he never lived long enough for us to see what he might have looked like old.
Yes.
Because he might have looked the same because of all the surgery, right? I mean, yeah. Diana Ross still looks the same.
Yes.
Because of all the plastic surgery. Mm. And there are other much worse examples.
Mm.
But maybe I lied just now because I said I haven't thought about this a lot. But you know what keeps coming up on my feed and made me think of this probably more than I should have this week?
Okay.
Those videos that they do with AI where they de-age or they age people. So they play like some music that is very nostalgic and then they've got someone like... Daryl Hannah, you know, is this beautiful actress from the 80s. And they show how she got, how she changed as she got older. So they've got like a before and after, like we showed with Kelly Osbourne. Mm-hmm. And I watched a couple of those and then they kept coming. And I found myself at like the 1 a.m. watching just reels and reels of these.
Okay.
I mean, it was some of them I thought, oh, wow, I wondered what happened to that person.
Yeah,
but, you know, when someone also, when they get old, and I'm talking about old beyond 70 old, don't be offended if you're beyond 70, I don't think you need to worry as much. And probably most people at 70 don't. It's maybe only the Hollywood people who do.
Mm.
Because your looks at that point are not the reason that someone loves you or doesn't love you or knows you or doesn't know you.
Yeah.
At that age, it's no longer about that as much.
I feel like by, like... 60 even, not probably, even 70.
Probably. And yes, of course, it always helps, and some people do age better than others. And I think every line is part of your story.
Yeah.
It's just go for it, man. Like when I get to that, that's when I'm waiting to get fat.
Yeah.
That's when I'll do it.
There's something beautiful about someone just embracing where they currently are in life and saying, this is where I currently am. This is.
Agreed.
I'm not trying to fit in with 20-year-olds at the moment. I'm not trying to... You know, like, look like an 18-year-old at 63.
Zarina says, what about Morgan Freeman? I bet he was born old with gray hair and a gray beard. It's hard to imagine Morgan Freeman young, right?
Actually, I can't imagine him young. I've never seen him young. He's always been old since I was a child.
Yeah. Like Pharrell and Morgan Freeman. Yeah, Pharrell also, he's always been young. And he looks exactly the same now as he did 30, 40 years ago.
What does he do?
I don't know. He's got some magic voodoo.
Yo, hope he's not doing some Ellen stuff.
With what did you bring up last time? The adrenochrome.
No, the stuff about Ellen, the babies. Yes.
Yeah, that's bullshit. it really is bullshit. And I think you got to call this out. There's enough conspiracy stuff out there. There are enough conspiracies that have been proven right. I think we can now start being a little more ruthless.
Yeah.
About separating the wheat from the chaff on the conspiracy front. Good morning to the Real Network family, says Sugar Chabalala. Well, thank you, Sugar Chabalala. That's very nice of you. Young, beautiful, and healthy, says Tracy. That is the goal, unless you're a got avoiding the sunlight. Got.
A got? I have no clue what that means.
I don't know what she's talking about.
I know.
Yeah, I listen, healthy is good at any age.
Yes.
But you can't be young forever, so you've got to look your age. Otherwise, it's creepy and weird.
It's weird, yeah.
And beautiful, sometimes you just dealt the cards.
Yeah.
Some people are just lucky.
And you can look good at whatever age. A person can look absolutely fabulous at whatever age. It doesn't really matter.
Right.
Yeah.
Tom Cruise is also a good ager. Yeah, he is. It's a good example. Mm. Morgan Freeman was old. I watched Shawshank Redemption. That was 30 years ago. Yeah.
And he was really
That's
old then.
That's congruent, Chris. That's correct. Pharrell Williams said in an interview, the one said he exfoliates his face every day.
Okay.
Maybe that's his key.
We all exfoliate every day.
No, we don't.
I exfoliate every day.
Okay, well, then you do. Then you'll look like Pharrell. You'll look like MASH like you do now in another 20 years. Okay, I don't even know. James Flex, do you exfoliate every day? Yeah.
He says he's been putting cream on.
No, he says he barely does.
He
Flex, what's your beauty?
He barely Flex, puts cream
what's
on.
What's your beauty? Flex, what's your beauty regimen?
They just use Vaseline.
Vaseline. At least he's not ashy.
Yeah, or at least he's not ashy. That's all that matters.
I mean,
also, these guys have good skin. They never had to struggle.
With Vaseline, you must just put.
You just put.
That's all you have to do. Have you seen Bonang Matheba now, says Limited Edition? Are you looking for us to get into trouble here?
Hey,
like what's happened to
please,
Bonang?
I don't
is it good? Is it bad? Yeah, please.
What's happening? I saw her the other day, actually. A friend of mine works with BNG. She's
I'm sure
a wine
she looks
connoisseur.
Fine. She's always a beautiful
and
woman.
She looks beautiful. She
yeah,
looks
I'm sure.
Fine. I don't know what this person's referring to, actually. Yeah.
Conga Chris says, the secret to immortality lies in Garrett's hair. It hasn't changed since the 90s. It has not changed. But, you know, I wasn't joking when I said to Ben the other day that I am going to grow my hair longer than it's ever been this year.
Ooh.
Just for shits and giggles. I'll probably look terrible. But I'm willing to do it. If I'm not going to do it now, when am I going to do it?
Have you ever grown it long?
No.
Yeah, it's
really
good to explore.
I have had pretty much the same haircut since I was 11. So, so I don't think it's time to do
something. It's good to explore, like push your limits, push your boundaries. Maybe you might have a comb out and look like Moist Critical.
And if I do but if I do look shit, that's also all right.
Yeah, that's fine as well.
Because I don't care what it is.
Yeah. I've also been exploring with my hair, Gareth. I've also been like letting it grow.
What you going to do, cha?
I've been just balling it up.
No, I can see that.
And I've been exploring because I've like, I grew up in a family where cheese cop, wire, wire.
Yeah,
and I was like, look, I'm finally have the freedom with my hair. Let me just play around. Let's see what works for me.
Are you getting good feedback from people?
I'm getting very good feedback. People are liking it. My mother hates it, but everybody else likes it. That's all that matters.
Okay, Koketso says, is the exfoliation, is that not a lemunsaki? My grandmother used to use it on me a lot. So that's like, what, like where you put lemon in it?
Yes.
Okay, yeah.
It's
but that is an exfoliator.
Orange bag. You can use that. But I used to use a brush. I used to have a brush that I literally would brush my face with.
Wow.
But now I use a scrub that has, and I mix it with pap. I put maize meal in my scrub.
But this is like your. You remember when you had your special peroxide cream? No, you've got all the stuff.
Is this like that? I feel like many people do this.
I think you should open up a line of products.
Yeah, like my pap smear face scrub. I'll call it pap smear.
Don't call it pap smear. That's
okay.
Because a pap smear is when they take a.
Oh no, I can't call it that. Okay,
a vaginal sample and
a pap scrub.
No, avoid the word. No, because it's going to be misunderstood.
Okay, I'll think of another name. But it works, Gareth. You take your face scrub. So I use, I don't want to plug them, but it's fine. I'll just mention it.
Yeah, you can.
It's the Kategua face scrub, the blue one.
Because you know what's going to happen now is
it's going to sell out. It's going to sell out. Last time I told them to use hydrogen peroxide, it sold out nationally. So I'm scared.
Okay.
But no, this is going to work. So you buy that face scrub, you take pap, you take like a teaspoon of pap, not even a teaspoon actually, like the tip of a teaspoon of maize meal, and then you just put it on there, and then you just scrub
Have
your face
you
with
made
that.
This part of your YouTube channel? Because people would love these tips.
My YouTube channel is strictly at the moment just like weight loss stuff.
Okay.
But I'm gonna
I think you should branch
go
out.
Into, I'm
I think
branch
it's time
out.
To
yeah.
get into more.
Yeah. I can actually show the guys that.
Let's see a clip of MASH.
I made a little super cut. I made it very quickly.
Yeah, that's cool.
But
let's take a look. Go on. Run it again. We need some salt. All we hear is ourselves.
Right now, I'm not trying to hate. I'm just being real, girl. You and all your peers who look like you have fat bones. You're wasting your best years if you're in your 20s, period, and fat. Our girl here could possibly be eating 600 to 700 calories all in one go right now. I'm not trying to hate. I'm just being real, girl. You're putting a bit too much trust in that body. Do you ever have any good days? People see that as a form of disrespect. I hope all the patients are still alive, because what were you doing? You can't be a hog every day. You know, on some days you need to tone it down. That ketchup is gonna zigzag right into your belly fat.
Okay, I love it. I love this stuff. Yeah, I think I've seen a couple of them, so I must pretend I don't know what you're up to.
Yeah, it's a fun little channel. You know, I keep it light, but I am going to branch out. I am going to be sharing way more stuff because my audience is begging me for more content. So.
Good. I think you should have these tips, like your peroxide face lightener, yes. your pup smear. Okay, so Bitcoin Boots says, warning, don't upset black people by calling something pup that isn't pup.
Oh.
Apparently that's a thing.
Upset rich black people.
Pup has multiple uses, says Dinejo. And then Cabello says, African moms will slap us for wasting food.
It's not wasting food if it's making you look good. It's okay. Not wasting food.
All right. Okay. You should host a South African version of Super Size versus Super Skinny, says Melissa.
Yes.
That's a good idea, too.
That's an amazing idea. I should actually pitch that.
All right. I want to show you one other thing quickly. There's so much to go through this morning. So this is a monkey that they found in South America. Ooh. But it was named by the Peruvians probably about 600 years ago.
Okay.
It's a very ugly monkey, and they decided to call it the English monkey. You'll see the translation is Spanish. And in the native Peruvian language before that, they had the same. It's an English monkey. You can see why. This is what English people look like after they have been in the sun in Ibiza for about 5 minutes, right?
No.
It's called a macaco inglés, which translates literally into English monkey in Brazil. That's what they got there.
No
way.
Look
at that ugly thing. That is how a lot of English people. Okay. So if you see focus on the monkey on the right while I say this, and imagine it going, all right, then, Gav, you want to go down a pub and go and have a glass of beer with me? A tankard of beer, a couple of pints, let's go. Who are you supporting this weekend? Arsenal, Man United, Man City, Liverpool, who's your favourite? Oh, what, Scunthorpe United? I can't believe that's true. All right, Gav, let's go and see our side, get some sun on our faces. Look like we've been to the south coast of Spain a little bit. And that's how that monkey talks. You can just tell.
Yeah, you can just tell.
And look at the one on the left.
What's some fish and chips.
That's his wife. That's the one on the left is the wife.
Oh, my gosh. And keep in mind that I'm sure in those parts of Brazil.
Why don't you come back inside? I've been standing here with children upon children, giving me hard time.
Fish and chips with peas.
There
some
we go.
Chinese.
That's how she talks on the left. Telling you,
oh
right.
My gosh.
So those people who named that thing the macaco inglés, they were spot on.
Because all the English people they see are people who came on vacation and they've been laying in the sun.
Torre Molinos, Torre Molinos. Telling you, that's what it is.
That is
speaking
crazy.
Of the English, I did see Senator Kennedy in America had some choice words for Keir Starmer. You know Keir Starmer, the Prime Minister of Britain, is the most unpopular Prime Minister in history.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Take a look at this.
The United Kingdom was founded by geniuses, but at the moment it's being run by idiots. I'm not a big fan of the Prime Minister, Prime Minister Starmer. Now he says you can use our bases. Thank you very much. It's a little late. We don't need you. He also is trying to give President Trump advice about how to conduct the war. That's a little bit like seeking the advice of a nun about sex.
Seeking the advice of a nun about sex. That's hard. Hard words for Keir Starmer, who is probably going to be out on his ass soon and look like one of those monkeys that you saw standing in some tropical place trying to get some sun. Vyasin says, I was sitting next to a guy at a bar in Cape Town yesterday. Weather fucked him up properly. He was as pink as his t-shirt. Hey, did you hear? It was like 40 degrees in Cape Town yesterday.
Yeah, people have been talking about a heat wave in Cape Town. I'm like, what heat wave? It's freezing here.
Well, I mean, the last, I hate to admit it, but the last couple of nights, I wasn't just sleeping under the sheet. I was sleeping under the blanket.
I've been sleeping under the blanket too. It's been freezing.
Yeah. So Cape Town, keep enjoying summer, you lucky fuckers.
But you know, whatever weather's in Cape Town will be here, will be this side in a few days. So by Monday or so,
we'll get hot.
We're going to get hot in a bit.
That's good. I like that.
Which is exciting.
All right. Every week on the show, or at least once a month on the show, I have to admit some new weird obsession that I've got, because you know I get obsessed with things quickly and I get bored with things quickly, and I mean this is why I'm impossible to live with. But I started watching videos and I am amazed at the talent of people who make jewelry.
Okay.
I don't know how this came up, maybe because I've got the chemistry interest and you know, these people are doing things with gold and silver and tungsten and titanium and rhodium and palladium and all of these metals.
Mm.
So it started feeding me. Again, this algorithm's got me whipped. I cannot beat it. apparently what you got to do with the algorithm to confuse it is you must do the opposite of what you did in the previous video. Then it doesn't know what the fuck to do. So if you get a video about jewelry, then you must immediately go to hunting rifles. Mm. And then it'll go, I don't know what's happening here. But this thing has got me waxed. It's got chemistry. It's got architecture. It's got art. It's got history. It's got science. It's got now jewelry is thrown in there. I watched this guy making a ring, like he was melting down the gold and he roll it and make it into a strip. And I know for people who already know this stuff, it's probably like, oh, this idiot's just discovered it. But I didn't know any of this before. I've never seen anyone make any of this shit before.
This is really fascinating, Gareth. I've never seen any of this.
Mash, it is wow. You know, because you get an end product.
Yes.
And the end product is a work of art. This guy basically have these little jewelry saws that they put through a hole and they cut the thing perfectly and they file it down. And then they put a stone in there and it's just amazing to watch. And the videos are each 10 to 15 minutes long.
What?
And I don't get bored. I watch that whole thing from beginning to end. I have to sit through some ads sometimes, which is annoying. But I watch the whole thing and I'm obsessed. I feel like maybe in a year or two, I'm going to want to learn how to make some of that shit.
So
if it doesn't go away.
This is like actual proper jewelry. Because I've seen a few jewelry videos, but the ones
real
I've seen
shit.
I'll give an example. Once I've seen one where a lady's cat dies, she tells the story, and then she has her cat cremated, and then they put her cat in resin on a ring.
What
so is it that
of
kind
shit
of...
Ju- your algorithm serves you the weirdest
oh,
shit.
Oh, okay, it's not that. Oh,
no,
I'm so sorry.
No, this is like they're using precious and semi-precious stones. They're using gold, silver, platinum. I mean, it's a phenomenal thing to see. These tiny little tools they use to file things and to polish things. And I got to tell you, I'm kind of obsessed. So I've gone through, in the last while, all those rabbit holes. You know, I talk about it every week when I find some new obsession. So I think this might be the next thing.
Oh, wow.
For
that
me.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Jewelry.
Vyasin says, if I went out in the sun these past few days, I would have started looking Senegalese. Yeah, that's dark, Vyasin. That's very dark. So that's Cape Town's weather at the moment. Guy does know a lot about nuns and fathers. Maybe. Wade says, messing with the algorithm, my watching weird random vids is fun. I want to know if there's anybody, and maybe if you've done this and you're listening to us now or watching, and you've completely fooled the algorithm and it does not know what to send you anymore. I'd love to know how you do that. There must be a way.
Yeah.
Maybe if I ask ChatGPT, how do I confuse my algorithm? Maybe then it'll come up with something.
Joe, I don't even know how the algorithm works. Also, these algorithms are always being changed and switched up all the time.
Tracy says, Gareth, please say in that accent that you just did just now, Keir Starmer is a wanker. Well, that happened to him the other day. He arrived at Westminster Abbey. This is the Prime Minister of Britain.
Yeah.
Shows you how much Britain's changed. And he was getting up out of the car and walking up the stairs, and someone started going, la, 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 he's a wanker. And, like, loud. Everyone could hear it at a church while he's getting – the Prime Minister. I mean, there's no respect for this guy at all.
Wow, people in the UK are just so direct.
They really don't like him.
Wow. Yeah.
And the UK, they want to replace – this is apparently news this week. I saw Piers Morgan was losing his shit about this week.
Okay.
In the UK, they want to replace Winston Churchill on their banknotes with British wildlife, including hedgehogs and deer and things like that. So they're going to take Churchill off the money.
Yeah.
And they're going to put – I mean, it used to be that only the king or queen was on the money.
Yeah,
that's how it always used to be. But they never even there was never a possibility Prince Andrew would be on the money.
That was never happening. Yeah,
But it should just be King Charles, just like it was Queen Elizabeth.
Exactly,
and like every pound note, it didn't matter what denomination, from 5 to 100. Had the queen on.
Was standard.
That's what I remember. So why is Charles so ugly that he's going to make the money less valuable? Really? Sausage fingers? Eish. Like, what's going to happen there? And now they're putting hedgehogs and deer on there and they're taking Winston Churchill off. I think that's a very bad idea.
Yo.
They also got rid of the House of Lords this week.
Oh.
Not as a part of their parliament, but there are two kinds of lords in England. So there's the hereditary peers. Those are people who, you know, for sometimes 500, 600, 700 years have been passing the title down to the eldest son, to the eldest son. And they've been sitting in Parliament in the House of Lords helping to make laws.
Aibo.
Well, I mean, it's not. So what is Goodwill Zwelithini handing down to, you know?
But he's not in Parliament helping make laws. Or
well, he's there. We have a second House of Parliament, which is a House of traditional leaders. That's what it's supposed to be.
Yeah,
and people all over the world do this. They have elders. Those elders pass on their authority to someone else, who becomes the next elder.
Yes,
and they're getting rid of that in the House of Lords now. It's only what they call life peerages. So these are people who are they're being rewarded for contributing to society in some way. So if you invent something or if you're a great philanthropist or whatever, they can either knight you, they can give you an OBE, they can give you a medal, they can give you
that.
So now they can make you a lord.
Yeah.
And then you go and sit in Parliament. And what they often do is people who have a legal background who they want to keep in the system, like retired judges or people who've helped write laws or politicians, they then send you to the House of Lords. But basically, the House of Lords is now just filled with lawyers, which is a horrible idea.
Sounds awful.
Yeah, you want it to be a prestigious thing. You know, there's this guy whose family have been involved in the community somewhere for 500 years. That you don't want to throw that away, even if they are a degenerate aristocrat. Eesh. They might have something to give. So I think this is another sign of the managed decline of Britain. And I feel sorry about that. I really do. My algo... I don't know. Oh, that's your algorithm. Sorry. That's Wade. He says, thinks I'm a wealthy European. Maybe next time I'll convince it I'm a South Korean teen. That's hilarious. That's Wade who messes with the algorithm. Now, I would love to – I'd love to be able to just reset my algorithm.
You actually can. Well, on Instagram, you can. There's actually settings now where you can literally change your algorithm. There's a new setting on Instagram where you can literally – your algorithm is presented in keynotes. There's keynotes about – you can literally clean it out. I'm not even joking with you right now. If you go on Instagram and you start scrolling through reels, some of them will say they relatable content. It'll be like a little gray block. You touch that and it shows you your algorithm. You can literally remove things and add things to your algorithm.
Shit.
You literally now have control over your algorithm. Maybe I must do this. On Instagram.
This does sound like a good plan.
Yeah.
All right. I think I'm going to do it.
It comes in handy on Instagram. So when you're watching reels, like here it is. It says from Jim Humor, this one video. I touch it, and then I say, see your algorithm. And it says your algorithm at the top.
And then it's got words.
Yeah, it says, lately you've been into fitness, gains, dark humor memes, and poking fun at love life.
Wow.
And then it shows me everything.
That's you in a nutshell. Okay.
And it shows me everything else I've been interested in. It says bodybuilding, memes, relationship humor, food and dining.
You have to show me after the show where I have to do this.
Yeah. It's right there in your reels. You go to the reels tab.
So you go to okay, let's all do this, everybody, because we're going to fuck with the algorithm now, okay? Let's see if we can do this. So you go into Instagram, you go to your reels.
The reels tab, which is the second tab on
Got it.
On the left. And then as you're scrolling, you should see a gray block above your videos. Is it not showing up? A little gray block above the videos. As you're playing videos, a little gray block should show up above the videos.
Okay, yeah, hang on. Let me just see. Little gray block. I'm not. It's not.
You're not getting it.
No. You must have some.
You can touch the settings on the top right.
Okay, we're all doing this. So here we go. Okay, settings top right, and then what am I looking for?
So, no, on from the reels. So you go to the reels, and there's a settings button on the top right.
Okay.
So you touch that settings button. It says your algorithm at the top.
We're gonna have to do this some other time. I'm going to get this wrong. I'm going to get it wrong. I'm going to screw this up.
So you can edit it, though.
I just wanted to see what my word cloud would be. I'm very keen to do this. All right, Mashiane, thank you very much for popping by with us this morning.
Thank you, Gary.
And you have an awesome weekend.
Oh, I'm gonna.
What are your plans? Anything
I'm
exciting?
I'm just going to be YouTubing, and that's it. Getting up to Mashcapades.
And Mashcapades is good. That's a good word. That should be your YouTube channel name.
I think I'm going to make that.
And make sure your brother doesn't screw up any more phones.
Oh, jeez. And Rebecca Malope, please, girl, don't sue us.
Yeah, please. We don't need these Sefutis against the Malopes, because there's been fake news made about Rebecca being dead. Please.
Yeah.
And tell your brother to calm the hell down.
I will.
All right.
All right. Cheers, Gareth.
Thank you, Mash. All right. We've got so much more to come still. I'm thrilled that we will be joined in a short while by Beverly Stock, the mother of our friend Warwick Stock, and somebody who I've been waiting to speak to for ages. So, you know, the best place to talk to anyone is on the show. We all have our conversations right here, so that you get to be a part of it as well, which I'm very excited about. Because there's a lot that people want to know about Warris, about his mom, about his childhood. And I think many of us feel really close to him, even if we weren't that close to him, because she is probably the person in this world who knew him the best. So there's no one better than that. Might help all of us to get a little closure. Might also help all of us to get to know the guy who we already loved that much more. So I'm delighted to have her here. We'll get to that in a second or two. If you want to abuse James, what's your email address? Won't you put it on the screen? Flex, please put James's email address on the screen so that if anyone wants to abuse him through the course of this week, they can do that. That's what he's here for. And he's waiting to hear from you. It's his favorite part of the day, where he goes to his emails and there's a whole pile of emails from people saying, James, get your act together. James, what's wrong with you? Why do you have such a funny shaped head? Why did you never wash your car? All this, whatever you want to say to him, he's ready for it. All of it. And he's happy to hear from you. So put up that email address, Flex. There it is. James@thereal-network.com. All right. So I mentioned that we're going to speak to Warris's mom, and she is here with us now. It's such a pleasure to meet you. And let me tell you, your son brought so much joy and happiness and courage and love into this place. So he was in this room a lot. And I can feel his presence here, but it's such a pleasure to be with you, Beverly.
Thank you. And I finally get to be in the green room.
I know. Well, it's not green when you're on screen. Look there.
See? Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay.
Look, magic. So listen, first of all, how are you?
Oh, the dreaded question.
No, well, I mean, it's what everybody's thinking, yes. Right? And you've probably answered this a million times. So.
I'm stronger than I thought I would be. Let me put it that way. Because, you know, when you you think about the sort of tragedy happening to myself, I thought I would not manage, have a complete mental breakdown, stay in a room crying 24/7. But now the reality, I'm actually much stronger, Gareth. I'm soldiering on.
Yeah, well, you're made of strong stuff. I mean, certainly Warris was made of strong stuff as well, so he must have got it from you.
I hope so.
But, you know, I didn't realize, and we were talking about you when I think it was Marvin and I the other day, and that you had to go through this with his dad as well. The same thing happened.
Yes, we did. Yes, I did. And is that not just so eerie? So Warwick's dad was shot in Krugersdorp at the age of 34. That was in 1994. Warwick was 8 years old. And as his dad's cousin who reached out to me said, she reminded me, she said, you know, like Leon, Warwick died with his boots on. He didn't die having fun, you know, at an event. This person was working on the 16th of December.
That's right. Which was a public holiday.
And he met his fate exactly like his father. Shot and then dies on a street. Not at the hospital, not in an ambulance. So this is where we find ourselves.
It's only been like 2 months.
It has.
And I'm sure it's been a really tough 2 months for you. It always is. These things, and I say always is, like I know, but for a mom, there's got to be nothing harder in the whole world.
I don't think so. I honestly don't think so. So whoever chose to take him from me, because I'm at the angry stage of my grief now.
And you're entitled to be, right?
The fog. Mm. So the first few weeks were just a blur. Mm. And then exhaustion. But now I'm angry. So whoever chose to take him away from me doesn't realize that the story didn't end on the 16th of December, you know, at 12:17, which is the time the shots rang out. For me, it was the beginning of what will be the end for me, because I'm going to carry this now until the day I die. I'm going to carry it until the day I die. Because, you know, as I've said to other people, Gareth, whether your child is 4 months or 40 years old, when you get the phone call, like what happened to me, that he has been killed, you definitely go through the same physical pain as what you experience when you actually give birth to the child. It's you can't explain it to other people, but yes, that's the emotion that I went through on that day. So I don't think I'm ever going to find closure. No.
You know, it's very difficult to there's so much I want to ask you about him, and we will. We'll talk about, because people ask me, and then I say, well, I don't know. I had the pleasure of knowing him for the last maybe 6 years or so, and we really got to know each other when we started working here together. And I can see a lot of his personality and his courage in you just in the last couple of minutes, because you and I haven't really got to speak.
Yes, I was trying to avoid you.
No,
Since we first chatted in January, I said, I'm not going on to Gareth's show.
I know, and I'm so glad you did this, because really it's as much for the audience as it is for me, as it is for all of us here, because you know, he was such a lively, fun, cheeky, brave guy.
Stubborn, opinionated.
Yeah. Was he hard to manage as a kid?
He was very hard to manage.
Really?
Yes, he was.
When did you realize that he was the kind of person? Because I think you, as a mom, realize this very early on. You realize you've got a kid here who's not going to just accept authority and not
conform.
And for many moms, that means you've got to dish it out, the clubs. No, my mother had to.
You know, with Warwick, he was raised by a village of women.
Uh-huh.
So in our family, he was the first boy. And when his dad died, okay, we were getting a paltry amount of maintenance, which I collected on a monthly basis at the very same court where I'm now going for the bail hearings. So you see how...
God.
So his dad died, and my family, my sisters, my mom and dad, that's the village of people who raised Warwick from that day until, you know, until he got to university and then left, decided he wanted to be a DJ, until he was able to support himself. But very willful.
Mm-hmm.
he hated me to tell people, this is a lighthearted one, about because I didn't have a partner. So Warwick slept with me. And Gareth, this arrangement went on until he was 12 years old. And he visited his friends. He slept with them in their bedrooms, you know, they put up the pretense. Came back from the visit, he's back in mummy's bed. Then I forcefully moved in.
I can see why I didn't want people knowing
into
this.
Into his
right.
own bedroom.
Yeah.
And the wall that separated us, we had our heads against those respective walls. You know what he would do? Bang his head against his wall, you know, to send signs that I'm not sleeping, I'm not coping. So he didn't like to be alone, which was actually a very strange thing. He always wanted people around him. Even as an adult, he always wanted people around him.
Well, it helped that he was... It helped that he was the kind of person other people wanted to be around. He was funny. He was charming. He was very smart. I mean, you must have picked up early on, too, that this is not some kid who's going to grow up to be average.
You know, because we lived in a very structured environment, I didn't pick that up until he was actually... at university, can you believe it?
Okay.
And that's when he really started bucking the system. You've got to bear in mind that my dad was the father figure
right.
for Warwick because his dad had died when he was 8 years old. So I think because he respected my dad and didn't want to disappoint him, he did try to conform.
Was your dad quite straight-laced and down the line?
My dad was straight-laced. He was a school principal.
Okay.
He had been just raised by the book.
Yeah.
Never swore.
Right.
You know, can I leave that part hanging?
Yes.
Zero expletives.
Because I don't know whether you remember, but that beautiful memorial where Fresh said to me, in one of the breaks while we were applauding someone who'd gone up and said something, and they were all brilliant.
Yes.
Fresh said to me, you can tell a lot about somebody by the quality of the speakers at their memorial.
Yes.
And I mean, there were beautiful speeches, but there were two things that I don't think the SABC has ever had on air before. When when PH said the P word.
Yes.
And the SABC apparently, because we were there, we didn't see it live, but they had the newsreader go on afterwards and go, we'd like to apologize to our viewers. So Warwick would have liked that. Your dad wouldn't, obviously.
I've been horrified.
And then the other one was, I think there was a thing, there was also some story, it could have been what Pearl told, I can't remember, but there was something else where they actually... like they cut transmission for a couple of seconds and then came back.
Yes.
Because I do like the fact that at his memorial, he was breaking new ground in terms of the rules being broken, you know?
No, the memorial was absolutely beautiful.
So you say your dad, sorry, we'll get back to the memorial, but you say your dad was quite straight-laced and he was a father figure for Warwick.
Warwick, yes.
What kind of a childhood did you have? I mean, tell me a little bit about your story before we get straight into his, because without you, there's no him.
My parents got married in 1952 at the age, my mom was 20 and my father was 27.
Okay.
And he was already a teacher. So we had really a charmed upbringing, Gareth. A very charmed upbringing.
Where was this?
Those years, they used to post teachers around. Okay. Mr. Mimbert was the Department of Coloured Affairs. So he did teach briefly in Vryheid, which is where my mom was from. And then he went to Pietermaritzburg, I think the better part of his teaching. No. Then he was transferred to a place called, it's called Ngalu. There's no English equivalent. Okay. But it's about half an hour's drive from Ikopo.
Uh-huh.
In the south,
right,
of KZN. And he was there from 1960, when I was born, until he retired at 1985. Our nearest neighbors were hills away from us.
Really?
It is so rural. And it's funny how things work out. In that, my dad was depressed when he had to retire at 60, but that was the retirement age at the time. And we as a family could see it. And there I had Warwick. So Warwick was born in November of 1985, and my dad retired in December of 1985. It gave my parents such a new purpose in their lives.
Phenomenal, huh?
Yes.
Nothing's for no reason.
Nothing
and timing
is
everything.
Reason.
Timing really is important.
Yes, yes.
So he was obviously, your father and your mum, clearly,
yes,
were fairly devoted to him, and he had these grandparents in his life from day one who were doting on him.
They were doting on him because I left Johannesburg at 8 months pregnant, and I went back to Vryheid and stayed with my family, my parents, until Warwick was 4. Then I came back to Johannesburg. I tried to bring him Gareth. He cried every day. Maybe I should be telling you that's where he dug his heels in.
Yeah.
He hated it.
Yeah.
The whole, you know, getting up every morning, rushing through Hillbrow, which is where we lived, Bria, taking him to a creche. This was a boy who was used to running around
on a farm
in an underpants without shoes on a farm with chickens and his dogs and being brought here. So I took him back to Vryheid and I went back in 1994, 2 months after his dad died. Not that we were in a relationship, but I just timed it so that I could be back home. Warwick was 8 years old. So my parents actually, I think,
in those
had
formative
more
years
of an influence on shaping the person who he actually became.
Well, I mean, you say that. It's obviously, genes are strong here. Yeah?
Yes.
I mean, there's clearly like a line of characteristics that I'm sure every parent sees, every grandparent sees, every child sees in their parents. And it's a phenomenal thing to see how that manifests in different circumstances. What was the thing that Warwick would do that reminded you most of your dad?
He was the gel that kept our family together, like my dad. Because I'll keep repeating to you, before his boys came along, they were just girls. And then lots of bickering and fighting. So Warwick was the one who actually kept everybody grounded. James, tissue. Make it exciting.
Yeah.
He was the one who, like my dad, just kept us together. Like, don't be silly. What is this argument about? Let's all just be together. And, of course, the physical affection. My father was a person who showed his love.
Which was rare. With that generation, that wasn't a thing they did very often.
That generation, that wasn't. I mean, my dad died at 80, Gareth. And he got up every morning before he got sick, and he got dressed in a formal trousers, lace-up shoes, and a formal shirt. That man could not eat with a tray on the table. he had to tray on his lap, like what we do now in front of the telly. He had to eat at a table.
Yes.
So like him, Warwick was very affectionate. Very affectionate, showed love. Kissy, touchy, feely all the time.
Yeah.
That's why, if we can go back to the story about Pearl, as his mother, Pearl, I know exactly what you were talking about.
Yeah.
That is who he was. He could share a bed with people and just hug and cuddle.
Yeah. Well, he had a lot of love to give. I mean, you could see that with his children. But you could also see, like, you know, he liked attention and affection from women. And he was good at it. And he was good at it.
Oh, that's a sensitive one.
Well, clearly, I mean, there were a lot of us were worried about how many women would arrive at the memorial service who none of us might know. You
know, we're gonna get into trouble.
Yeah, we will get into trouble.
I don't know how he juggled all these women.
Well, some guys have all the luck.
And he just said all the right things to all of them.
Yeah, he's charming.
So, unfortunately, all of them thought that they were the one.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, he had a definite fearlessness. Like, you could call him up and say, look, there's this very serious situation going on. He'd laugh and say to you, this is not an issue. This is not. Now, did that come from how he was raised? Did it come from his experiences, maybe more of them in his adult life than when he was a child? Because fearlessness is, I mean, you very seldom meet someone who, no matter what's going on, they're pretty calm. And he was like that. He was calm in a crazy situation. Or have I got it wrong? Do you have different
experiences? He thrived in chaos.
Yeah, he did.
And as you say, then he managed it. You know, the rest of us would publicly show that, oh, my goodness, I'm having a meltdown. Warwick got that trait from his dad. His dad was fearless. His dad was a biker.
Yeah.
Which was very big in the 80s. And he was the they called him the leader or the whatever of his biking group. And he did things with that bike on the open road that other guys would not ever dream of. And like Warwick, his family also feared that he would die in a motorbike accident. You know, the last thing on their minds is that Leon would die at work. He was fearless, absolutely fearless. So I think that was more nature versus nurture. Yeah. It was an inherent trait.
So what do you do, and maybe you can help all the rest of us. I don't know if you have this answer, and I won't blame you if you don't. But what do you do when you miss him? What do you think about? I don't want to upset you, because that's not the point of this interview either. I really want us to have a moment to celebrate him and to get to know you, frankly, because I think that that's something we've missed out on as well.
Yes. I go through the podcasts, the voice notes, the family videos, of which we have plenty, because you know Warwick loved the camera.
Yeah.
And he had this wicked sense of humor.
Mm-hmm.
So what he would do is we'd go to a function, family functions, but because I was the only person he had, so I'm being selfish here, when we'd get home, we'd phone one another. So hot from the function. And
gossip.
Have a huge gossip about each and every, sorry, family members. You probably know that this is what's happened. And I miss that about him. So I listen, and then I do have a good cry. Because I still think to myself, was this vibrant, witty, super intelligent person, is he gone forever? Is he really gone forever? So for me, you know, Gareth, it's, I become anxious that, as you say, it's just 2 months. It will be 3 months on the 16th of March, which is Monday. the footprint that Warwick left, please God, don't let it just have been a footprint in the sand. I know people have lives and they need to move on. But I really would like for the people whose lives he touched to sort of remember him more.
Yeah.
Get that footprint
cast
more in stone than in sand. You know, I'll never move on. But for everyone else, the girlfriends, they're all young. you probably know Cindy's expecting a third child. She's in another relationship. You know, Warwick and I had the conversation and he said, Mummy, oh, he called her Bok.
Okay.
Bok is having another boy. I would have been happy if it's a girl. I said, but it's not going to be your child. He says, it doesn't matter. The boys would have loved to have had a sister. So that's how he thought.
Right.
And then Kian's mother, Iman, also has another little boy who's probably about 17, 18 months now. So as much as I was I was angry, Cindy will attest to that, every time he came and he said, they're having another baby, I was livid through all my... But I'm so pleased about it now, Gareth. You know why? Because they will hopefully take up the baton for their dad. And Warwick then lives on through the boys.
That's exactly right.
Imagine if he didn't have these children.
And what children? I have to tell you one other thing about the memorial, because, again, just all these phenomenal people who were there saying things about the most phenomenal person who the whole thing was unfortunately about.
Yes.
But when your grandsons got up there, I thought, yeses. You know, if that's a testament to anybody. First of all, just the courage.
The courage,
which they get from him, from you, from your dad. And then such lovely people. Just such lovely testament to people whose father loved them and who they loved having a father like that. People who will no doubt go on to make a tremendous contribution themselves and will be excellent at whatever they do. I'm sure they will. But you can't wish for a greater legacy than that.
That's so true. And I really hope so, because they are the reason why I'm sitting here today. I really would have just given up. But it's the boys. The boys. And you know, Gareth, Warwick was far from perfect. He had lots of faults. But if there's anybody out there, they welcome to make contact after this podcast, who can say that his bad traits or the bad outweighed the good. I'll take that person on.
Yeah.
His good traits outweighed the bad in so many ways. I mean, I chastised him and shouted at him up until the Sunday before this happened, when he asked me for 50 rand to go and get a vape. So, you know, that 50 rand was actually just taken and really. But he would always say, sorry, mama. And we'd move on from there. He never bore a grudge.
No.
He never bore a grudge.
That's amazing. Every reaching, that's amazing.
He didn't. And let me tell you, Gareth, Warwick was in the trenches for so many years. I was really worried when he left 5FM. I thought it was a bad decision, but we both know once he set his mind on something, very stubborn, you know, he ran it by me and I said, not a good decision, but he did it anyway. So that was in 2016. Mm-hmm. And I thought he was at the pinnacle that time. And then he went into security. 2 years later, Warwick was literally on his knees. You know, I used to say to him, if rock bottom in life had a basement, you've actually found the basement.
Wow.
And he never gave up. He kept bouncing back. And having faith in people. Oh, my poor child. Yeah, Gareth, he had my dad as a role model. But somehow or the other, I think Warwick was looking for a father figure. Okay? The uncles will remain anonymous. But there are lots of uncles. Uncle X, Uncle Y, Uncle Z. Yeah. That he spoke to me at length about. And I think he was looking for a father figure in those individuals. And
some of them were good choices and some of them were bad.
Some of them failed him.
Mm.
And it broke him. You know, people didn't see that. So between 2018 until the time that he got onto Kagazi in 2019, which was brief, and then he went off the radar again, tried so many other ventures. Then he got the podcast, and then Skelly Visa, he did the momentum. Warwick was really struggling. He still had three mouths to feed.
Yeah.
And his children, he still tried to give them the best of everything, as well as their mothers. So the whole responsibility fell to Warwick, and guess who his support system were? His mom and his cousins. Not the uncles.
Yeah. Yeah, and unfortunately, that's all you can rely on.
That's all you can rely on.
How much did you guys rely on him, though?
We did, because when he was on the crest and things were going well, he was generous to a fault. So he helped everybody, not just me. He helped the extended family, and I know he also helped friends. Mm. So the tragedy is that when his cup was empty, he was still trying to pour from an empty cup. You know what? He could be puzzling over so many things. But if you called him and needed a favor, he would allow you to speak for half an hour and then try his damnedest to help you. You know, get in the car and see if he can sort this out for you. Oh, I hope he did that for you guys as well. I know he did it for lots of people.
Babe, I must tell you, there are so many people who, and we probably, you and I don't even know a tenth of the number of people who, he was the kind of guy you could call up and he would solve problems. Sometimes you didn't want to know how he was going to solve the problem, but he would solve the problem. And he knew everybody, and everybody liked him. You know, everyone who I ever met and Warwick's name would come up, they would light up. They'd be like, this is one of the best people I know. Because he did. He did help everybody. He was prepared to go out of his way. Nothing was too difficult for him. You'd say to him, listen, I need to – when can you be in Cape Town? And he'd be like, just tell me when, I'll be there. That kind of thing.
He needed to learn to say no.
Yeah. Well, people like that. People like that invariably, they end up being pulled from pillar to post. And I keep thinking that maybe because of his nature of trying to help everybody, he put himself in situations where he didn't always need to be. And maybe even on that day, you know, when I think about it. But coulda, woulda, shoulda. What's the point, right?
What's the point now, Gareth?
You can't beat yourself up about stuff like that because you can't rewrite the past.
Yeah. None of us had a crystal ball to foresee what was going to happen. And eerily, the girlfriend who he was with at the time of his death said to me, he was fearful. I feel sad that he didn't share it with me, but he probably thought, mummy's plate is already too full. Let me not add to it. So she says that when he got the phone call on the Tuesday morning and he left, he actually said to her, and I can't believe what he said this, because when I used to make him very angry, he'd say similar things. He said, kiss me goodbye because I'm going to die today.
Good God,
and
really?
Can you imagine how consumed
the hair on the back
with
of my neck standing up.
Guilt?
Is that what he said?
He said, kiss me goodbye because to today. I'm going to die today. And she said, don't speak nonsense. And he was on a phone call. She didn't know with who. He went to the lounge, put on his sneakers, and he left. And she spoke to him again at 12:07, when he said he's going to pick the boys up and then he's coming back to Melrose Arch. So this poor girl, who is all of 21 years old, she's absolutely shattered. And I say to her, there's nothing you could have done about it. You didn't have a crystal ball that said to you, this time it's actually really going to happen. Convince him to stay at home or to go with somebody. He chose to go alone.
Well, I mean, you said you're never going to get past this, and I'm sure that that's true. You know better than anyone else. There are so many messages here. I'm just looking at people who are saying, the whole of South Africa want to thank you for giving Warwick to us. I wish I'd met him.
I reiterate, guys, he was far from perfect.
Yeah, but none of us are.
But wow.
None of us are, right?
Warwick was the golden child.
Huh?
Because I watched how he worked a room. I watched how he spoke to girls. he didn't suffer from short man syndrome in any way, shape, or form. People loved him.
As Vyasin says, your son was a legend, Mrs. Stock. We really enjoyed his point of view. Absolutely
Thank
funny.
Thank you.
May his soul rest in peace. You know, I think he would have liked to be remembered, and I think he deserves to be remembered. But what would you like people to remember? Because you said earlier,
yes,
you think it's important that we keep his memory alive, which yes. I think everybody who loved him wants to do, right? But what would you like us to keep remembering?
Is his fearlessness. That the fact that he went into everything that he did with such a passion, and he still had so much to offer. Warwick had such great plans.
Mm.
So I would like that to be his legacy. He loved. He just loved so unconditionally. And very few people saw the struggle, the dark patches, the dark phases of Warwick's life. So really, guys, please just don't forget him yet. As I say, don't just let his have been a footprint that was made in the sand, and the story ended on the 16th of December. His children just deserve more. They do deserve more. Who's going to pick up the baton for Warwick?
Well, we all have a little part to play.
I know. And you know, Gareth, as I said, human beings are so strange. People reached out to me at the time, and you have some the grief fog. Those weeks went by in a blur. Mm-hmm. I can't remember very much about the 16th of December, the memorial, the funeral, the cremation ceremony, even the days thereafter. So you won't believe me, only at the end of January, I was going through my phone and I was looking at people having reached out to me on Messenger. People from Australia, from the UK, who were trying to just touch base with me to offer their condolences, and I was apologizing and saying, I'm so sorry, I'm only getting back to you now. They understood.
Yeah.
But I'm going to go back to the fact that people are strange. There are people who didn't actually make contact with me at all to this day. I would would have thought
people
that...
People who you expected would.
Yes. I don't want them to see it as a criticism, but it is, because I just think it's strange behavior. Mm-hmm. Warwick was shot in cold blood 5 times in his back. And he still tried to run about 50 meters from where the first shot rang off until he collapsed in front of Zambezi House. So that's where my child took his last breath. To date, I haven't heard from anybody at Zambezi House. If you followed the case, the investigating officer said that the owner wishes to remain anonymous. That's fine, Garrett. I respect that. Sean X, I do respect that you want to remain anonymous. But you have people who work for you. You have minions. And I would have thought that somebody from Zambezi House could have said, Miss Doc, we'd like to offer our sincere condolences for the loss of Warwick. That's it.
Yeah. It's not a lot to ask.
It's not a lot. And Sean can remain anonymous. But I feel it as a...
And you did say,
anger. I'm glad that,
listen,
that's my anger.
you don't have to apologize for anything.
Yes.
And you did say you were angry earlier, and I mean, that's normal, right?
Yes.
You shouldn't feel bad about that. You go through what you've heard about these stages of grief and things, and I'm sure there's more to come, and there'll be healing, but you'll never forget, and you'll never be the same way as you were before.
No.
But it was very important to me that we got you in here, because there are a lot of people here who love you.
Thank you.
We're not going to forget you, and through your son, your whole family have played a very important part in our lives. And it matters to us that he made the contribution he made here and everywhere else he did, and in businesses that we weren't involved in, and in jobs that he had before.
Yes.
And with his kids and all his friends. I mean, this was he was a big personality. And
he was.
You know, sometimes they say you don't get to be here for a long time, you get to be here for a good time. And I often wonder if it's worth living into your 80s or 90s and living a quiet life, and you kind of, everybody in your village knows who you are, but nobody else in the world knows who you are. Or... what is it? Burnout or fade away, right? And he was a burnout guy.
I think that is actually the better option. Is to squeeze so much into your... He had 40 years.
Yes, they were full.
And wow, this person barely slept.
Mm.
Which drove my mother almost to drink. Because from when he was a toddler,
yeah,
he used to actually question, why should we sleep? And... if you put the lights off, Warwick would still be walking around in the dark and saying he doesn't want to sleep. Why should he sleep? He got by on minimal sleep. So he could go to sleep at 1, 2, 3 a.m. and be up in the morning. Right. It's almost like he knew, I need to squeeze so much into these 40 years.
And he loved being alive. Yeah.
So then
he
living loved. Until you're 80 and just being...
Yeah, being ordinary. He wasn't ordinary, and that's a privilege for all of us to have been part of. Anyway, I don't want to put you through hell. This is not the point of this. I didn't bring you here because I want people to come here and make you feel better or worse, hopefully better. But
yes.
I don't. It's the reason I needed to get you in here is because all of us here need to let you know that we love you, that we are here for you, that he is a massive part of who we are and will always be. And just to say thanks, you know. Thanks. Thanks for bringing this amazing character into the world.
And thank you so much to you guys, to everybody. And let me use this platform to say to them, thank you from the bottom of my heart. Because, ironically, despite the puzzling, Warwick was so happy in the last few years or yeah. months of his life. He loved what he was doing, Gareth. He really did. These people brought so much joy to Warwick's life. And for that, I'm grateful.
Well, thanks for coming.
Thank you.
Sorry I had to hound you, but...
Thank you. Thank you so much.
And by the way, you're just delightful. You're really...
Thank you.
You're a natural. You want to take over the podcast?
I'll be also bringing in lots of F-bombs and...
I don't think so.
W-bags.
Not the way you were raised.
I hate that word.
you've been very, very calm and sedate. I really expected Warwick's mom to be a bit more crazy. I like this.
Thank you.
You were the sanity in that family. Huh?
Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you very much. And thank you to everybody who joined us this morning. Mash, Ben, Dr. Hanan, and of course, Beverly Stock. And by the way, we will post all the links in the bottom of this description. And when we post the whole podcast later on for you, if you can make contributions to our ongoing legacy projects for Warwick and making sure that we keep the important contributions that he made to South Africa, to the media business, to his friends and family, most especially to his boys alive. And we'll put all of that information in the description. So if you can and you are feeling generous and it's Friday and you think, I have so much to give, then for God's sake, do it. Do it today. You never know when your last day will come. And I don't want to end on that note. But I do think it's really important that we live like he did. Just live every moment like it's really important and it counts, because that guy taught me a lot about that. All right, everybody. We'll see you next Friday. Be good.